Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 95 of Slam Fire Radio for Happy Friday the 13th, everybody.
Ooh, Friday the 13th.
I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Furlott.
Oh, and me's next. I'm Owen.
And I'm Matthew.
Even though we have show notes, and even though it's written down, and even though it's been explained, one of us, without fail, always seems to fail.
Usually me.
Well, Owen, why don't you jump into what you did with guns this week and try not to fail at that. But based on what I'm seeing...
Yeah, I didn't do anything with guns this week.
There you go. So you failed it. You know what we're going to do? We're going to change... We're going to give you a nickname.
Mike?
I don't know.
Mike.
That was the joke.
Long-time listeners will get that.
Yeah. Change your name to Dixon. Unlike Matthew, we just shorten it to but.
Oh, burn.
So, oh, really, Owen, you got nothing?
Let me see. No.
All right, then. McClatchy.
Yeah?
Regale us with stories of rimfire goodness.
Oh, rimfire goodness. How did you know? Oh, wait, because it's me. Never mind. I thought maybe I was, like, giving off a rimfire vibe, but...
Predicting that you shot rimfire this week would be like predicting I bought another striker-fired pistol.
Or that the sun rose.
I was just going to say, or that the sun rose. The sun's going to rise tomorrow. Yes, it's probably going to happen.
Well, it's Friday the 13th. Who knows?
You never know. Maybe I won't buy a rimfire tomorrow. Or shoot one. Or nah. That's not going to happen. Okay, so I did go to the range this week. I went to shoot the Squirrel's Friends Rifleman's Challenge again, because I want to get a better score. So I did it this time with my Marlin 795, just because I've done it with the Axis, and you know, just shooting different guns.
Jeff Reese has you on the ropes, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's okay. I mean, I'm not eligible to win it yet again anyway, so I'm not really concerned. But at the same time, I want to do a good show.
No, that's not true. You're not eligible to win prizes.
Oh, right. I can still win. Right. I just can't win a prize.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I can. Is it every 3 months or every 6 months?
It's six, I believe. You can't get prizes twice within 6 months. So what they're doing is they're giving the prizes to the next best target and giving the guy with the best
first,
target
first
honorable
loser
mention.
Basically is who gets it. Is that not correct? First loser.
Normally I would take the high road, but I'm not this time. No, yeah, first loser gets the prize. That's
I'm just teasing. Anybody who participates in that's a winner in my books, because you're getting out and shooting, especially if you're Canadian, because it's probably minus 40 out there. You're down prone in the frickin' snow.
Are you calling me a loser?
I might be, because you haven't got out there and done it yet, have you?
I've never shot a single one of these. Every month I go, I'm going to do this one. This one, I'm actually going to... And then next thing I know, it's like the 30th, 31st, and it's blowing and it's miserable. And I'm like, no. I guess I'm not going to do it this month. I'll do it next month. This month I wanted to shoot with my 308.
Well, we could do that tomorrow. I'm here. I mean, why don't we go to the range and shoot the thing tomorrow?
We could.
Well, something we could do. Oh. We'll see. Tune in next week to find out if Matthew and Owen went to the range and shot their Squirrel's Friends Rifleman Challenge. So anyway, I was out at the range, and I did a couple of things. That was Owen blowing in his Fox Pro.
I fixed it.
You fixed it.
For the listeners who don't know, he just busted it. A pen on it.
Sorry.
So I did take my Beretta back out, my little pistol, because I'm still tweaking the sights. You know, when you file slowly. And so I filed the appropriate amount this time. So vertically, bang on right where I want them, dead on at 10 yards. But now my windage is off to the left a little bit, so I just need to adjust my windage, which I can do just by drifting the rear sight, but I didn't bring any hammer or brass punches with me to the range, so I haven't done that yet, but that's something I will get done in the next couple of days, I hope. And so, I was shooting the Rifleman's Challenge with the Marlin, And I don't know if it was the cold weather or the fact that I haven't cleaned it in a while or what, but it was giving me light primer strikes. I got a couple not fails to eject, because anytime it fired, it ejected. But every now and then, if I got a dud, a light primer strike, and I racked the charging handle, the round wouldn't come out. And so then I had to lock it back, take the mag out, you know, do the get the knife out and pry the case out of the chamber. It was really irritating me. I mean, I love my 795s. I've got a couple of them. I've got a 70 as well. The Marlins are great guns. I really like them. Nothing against them at all, but I mean, let's be honest here, they're budget rifle. You know, less than $200.
Yeah. But well, Matthew,
this is right after you convinced me that it was the thing to buy.
As long as he does that, man. As long as his guns are working good, they are the thing to buy.
He has monkeyed quite a bit with his.
I have. Other thing it wasn't doing was the bolt wasn't locking back in the last shot every now and then.
Weird.
Which was irritating me as well.
Well, how is it a temperature thing? Is it the wrong lube for the temperature thing? Is it a clean thing?
Absolutely. You know, that it very well could be. It's probably a combination of all that. It could just be it's not clean. It could be that I've used my mags so often that the springs are just starting to wear out on them finally. I mean, I've owned these mags and have shot them. Well, you know how much I shoot rimfire. I'm going through, you know, mags and mags and mags of it when I go to the range. So, you know, maybe I'm just wearing out the springs. Who knows? I mean, like I said, I still love the gun. I'm not getting rid of it. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to dissuade anybody from getting one if they want to get one. They're great guns, and I do highly recommend them still. They're very accurate. Very
good. But know what you're getting.
But it still is, at the end of the day, a sub $200 semi-auto rifle. It's a budget rifle. So I was like, heck with this. I want something quality for a change. I want something that's going to work every time. I want a good name brand. I want something classy a little bit, and I want it to work, and I want it to be accurate. So I did
so
some.
I bought a 10/22.
So I bought the. I did not. No. So I went, and they are very hard to find. Normally, I wouldn't make an impulse buy like this. I decided that I was going to get one. I found one, and I bought it in about an hour, which I don't normally do. I normally wait a couple of days, but because they're hard to find in Canada, they are not. You know, they're sort of rare. This one was brand new in box. Unfired. It's a Browning Buckmark rifle. So those of you who aren't familiar with what that is, it's the Browning Buckmark is a pistol, but what they did is they put an 18-inch barrel on it and then also put a shoulder stock on it. And so now you have, it's a pistol carbine, basically. The mag goes in the grip just like it does on the pistol, but it's slightly shorter overall because the action is a little bit further back. So it's you know, they get great reviews. They are very accurate according to the reviews, very reliable. And so I'm really, it should be here Monday or Tuesday. So I'm looking forward to getting it out and playing with something that's a little more expensive than what I'm normally used to. All of my guns are budget guns. I don't have a single high quality, good name brand, you know, more than $500 gun in my collection. So,
well, except for your Glock.
Except that's true. My Glock is the only gun that cost me more than $500. So I thought it was time.
There though, and didn't say it was a high end gun.
No, it's not high end. Just high.
Well, I was gonna go on and say it was a high end, you know, precision tooled, you know.
in the States, it wouldn't. In the States, it wouldn't be over $500. Just up here in Canada, everything's a bit more expensive. Anyway, I did do some research online, and the price that I paid for this is about what the Americans are paying for them now. So I did get a bit of a deal Canadian dollar-wise, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to having something that's a bit more high-end, and I'm really curious to see what kind of accuracy I can wring out of it. So,
you're going to get the pistol, too?
Well, you see, you can't really have a pistol carbine that takes pistol mags that work in a pistol that we can legally get in Canada and then not go ahead and get that pistol as well.
You're absolutely right.
That's just,
It's just, yeah, it's like the universe, well, your you know what'll fall off if you don't get the pistol. That's what'll happen.
I don't doubt you, you know, just because I was going to go ahead and get one anyway, but
the gun gods will be angered if you don't complete the package.
So that's the plan. Probably not for a little while. I won't get one right away. But here's the cool thing about this, and this is the third one of these that I've bought, not the rifle. This is the first one I've bought of these. But the Buckmark, the Ruger Mark 1, 2, and 3 series, and the Colt Woodsman all have very similar magazines. And there is a device out there called the Ultimate Clip Loader. And what you do is you just drop your 22 rounds into it, it lines them all up, and then you just shove your magazine into it, and it loads 10 rounds just as fast as you can push the mag into the little device.
You still have that. I remember watching you use this before. It's just a crazy little tool.
And I don't have it anymore because when I sold my Ruger Mark or my Ruger 22-45, it went with the sale because what did I need it for? But I owned a Buckmark pistol in the past, and so I bought this Ultimate Clip Loader for that. Then I sold the pistol and the Ultimate Clip Loader because I'm like, I'm never going to need that again. And then I bought the Ruger. I'm like, oh, I should have kept that Clip Loader. And so, oh, okay, so I got the Clip Loader again. Same place, same price, no big deal. And then, oh, I sell the pistol. Oh, I'm not going to need this anymore, so I sold it along with the pistol. Now here I am buying it again, and this time I paid premium for it because the company that manufactures them no longer will ship them to Canada, so I had to find one in Canada, which of course means it's $10 more expensive.
Of course. So explain to the listeners why you're calling it a clip loader.
Yeah, that's because that's what they call it. It is technically an ultimate magazine loader.
Just because they're wrong doesn't mean you need to be wrong.
It's the name of it, though. It's like its brand name. I can't, you know, I wouldn't go and call a Toyota a piece of crap, even though that's what it really is. I still have to call it a Toyota. Wow. I'm kidding. I love Toyotas. I just needed a name. Now, I know Owen has one, so I knew it would get his hair up on end. But anyway, yep. So that's what I did. I, you know, did some shooting, bought a new gun, and we'll see how that goes. So, Trevor.
All right, busy week. I'm going to try and get through as quick as I can.
I like this first note here. Yeah, go ahead and...
Yeah. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the NEA lower. I was just in too much of a hurry to assemble it. So the story's kind of funny. We looked over all four of the lowers that came in and saw the same problem, supposed problem on all four. So Muffin says, oh, I'm calling this guy on Monday and I'm emailing these guys on Monday and all this stuff, or Friday morning actually is what it would have been. And anyway, I called Filthy because I knew Filthy had gotten one, and Filthy was like, oh my God, mine had mine too. And he called his buddy Chris, and Chris's didn't have the hole either. So here we are all thinking that we have this defective lower, right? Yeah, not so much. This has been a known non-issue since September. There's a thread on CGN where it explains how NEA simply moved the hole for the detent for the rear takedown pin to underneath the receiver where the grip goes on.
The funny thing is, I remember this, and I remember it now that it's been mentioned again. When you were going on about it, I didn't remember it then. But now that it's been mentioned that they moved it, I remember because I don't know if it was Owen I helped build an AR with, or whether it was you, Trevor, but it was an NEA, and we had to...
Owen. Probably my new lower.
It could have been your new lower that you got for your shorty.
Yeah.
The first NEA lower I built, this wasn't the case.
Oh, they had it in the right spot.
Well, the original location, we'll call it, because I think they actually put it in the right spot.
Right.
It makes much more sense to me in how you assemble an AR to it where they put it.
Oh, yeah. It was so much easier to pop your grip off if you wanted, you know, or something like that. And you're much more likely to be taking your buffer tube off or that sling where you put a sling plate. And it's always hard to get that sling plate lined up with that little spring and detent and get it all assembled and in the right place, not squash the spring and things like that.
I've never squashed one, but I caught myself squashing one once.
Squishing.
Whatever.
Squashing. Squashing.
Crushing. Anyway, so that's all straightened out. And thanks to Byron. Byron emailed me, I think, just after Filthy had called me the next day and went, Trevor. So then I got a visit from Bang My Switch Luke. He stopped in with holsters, and he picked up some brass punches for me.
And he brought you my fake suppressor, right?
Yes, he did.
That's the other thing I bought. I bought a fake suppressor for my Beretta, so now I can thread that sucker on the end, and now I can really play James Bond.
Oh, he told me that you wanted a fake can that screwed onto the end of an AR.
Oh, well, maybe I'll put it on the end of my AR, too, and then I'll play Rainbow Six or something.
So I got to tell this the funny story. Matthew calls me up out of the blue and says, can I borrow $20? Of course you can borrow $20. What are you talking about? Good, because I told Luke that you would pay him when he gets to your place. I'm like, Luke's coming to my place? Great. So here's what happened. Luke gets to my place. And I'm like, so Luke, I'm supposed to give you $20, right? He's like, yeah. I took out my phone. I EMT'd him $20.
So I could have just sent Luke the EMT, but no, Trevor did. So now, so instead of owing Trevor $20, now I owe him $20.50.
$21.
Yeah. It's $1 for an EMT. Yeah. But see, mine's $1.50, so technically I save 50 cents. Because if I had emailed or EMT'd Luke that, I would have cost me an extra 50 cents. So
yeah.
Thanks, Trev. You got my back.
Anytime. So,
and you want me to EMT you that money that I owe you?
Wait, stick it to the man, guys.
No, you can just wait till I'm there next week and then we'll settle it. And he brought me a pile of ammo. I have a friend who we send each other stuff once in a while. Mostly I'm on the receiving end of stuff, and he had a bunch of ammo. Get this. Ammo I don't need and or want, and I'm getting rid of.
Yes, please. Yeah. I don't understand the question.
Yeah, so Luke delivered a bunch of 12-gauge, and I sent you the picture of all the 12-gauge. I mean, there was a lot of 12-gauge.
Yes, there was.
76 rounds of 30-06. Actually, it wasn't. It was 72, and then four rounds of 270 in there. So it was pretty cool. And some ammo for my collection. Luke picked up some for me in the Miramichi, and this guy sent me some. And there's more coming in the mail apparently. But recently, I've added for those that are keeping track and wanting to know what I need, because some people email me after the show and say, "Do you have this? Do you have that?" So, and I got to talk about these cartridges just because they're so huge. Got a 300 Remington Ultramag. A 416 Rigby, a 3378 Weatherby, a 4570 Government. That looks like an insane pistol round. Like, have you seen this? The 4570?
Uh-huh.
That's what Andy Shan shoots his mooses with out in Newfoundland.
And why wouldn't you, really?
Exactly. Right? And I also got from Andy an interesting 300 Winchester short mag. He's used a 270 Winchester short mag case and neck sized it to take the 300 projectile.
So. Nice.
He also gave me, and I don't remember if I talked about this already, if I did, deal with it. He gave me a homemade 45 ACP shot shell made out of a 308 case.
Well, you told me that, but I don't know if you told the listeners that. And that is really cool.
Yeah, the head stamp on a 308 and a 45 is so similar that, if you trim down the 308 to the length of a 45 case, it'll feed. So, yeah.
That is neat.
What else? Yeah. I loaded up some 357 Magnum dummy rounds because I decided to do some dry fire practice with my pistol and practice reloads. So I had those little red snap caps, but they're only like 38 special size. So I loaded up some actual.
That's the other thing I forgot to mention. I did some reloading this week too.
Oh, yeah.
I reloaded some 223.
223, yeah.
Yeah, I did some crushed powder. What do they call it? Compressed powder loads.
Compressed, yeah.
Yeah, 27 grains of Varget. It's I want to see just how fast I can get these 55 grainers going and stay accurate. But I'll talk about that another time. No big deal. Keep going.
I have all the stuff upstairs sitting there for my 308.
Yeah, and you haven't.
And I haven't done a single thing. Uh-huh. I got to get on that.
You really should.
When I did the 30-06 loading a while back, I went through the bucket of 308 or 30-06 brass that I have, and I took out all the Winchester brass. So I prepped that today. Finished prepping it and then cleaned it in the stainless steel tumbler. And I thought while I was cleaning this 30-06 in the stainless steel tumbler, I would clean some of the some of the ammunition from my my collection. So I tossed a few into the tumbler. Now, Matthew, I sent you a text, but you didn't get it. And I understand why. You're at Owens and there's no cell service that far back in the woods.
That's it.
You remember the Craig round that you sent me?
Yes, I do.
Remember the color it was?
It was green.
The entire projectile was greenish black. Like it was
terribly, yeah.
It was like beyond corroded. 3040 Craig, and it's made by Dominion, and it is now beyond factory clean.
You want to see? That is awesome.
Yeah, when you get to your phone, you'll see the.
Can I have it back?
No, you may. Can't believe how clean it came. But unfortunately, I got a pretty nasty surprise. I threw in a couple of dummy rounds from my collection. They were basically just resized cases with a projectile pressed into them with no primer in them.
And so all the little pins got trapped in the primer hole.
filled them, and now they won't come out. Hey. And they weigh about a pound each.
So you're going to have to pull the heads and...
Yeah, well, luckily on one of them, it's just a double. I had a 270 that Todd Brown from Alberta sent me, and I didn't put a primer in it and stuck it. I should have put a spent primer in it. Hey, that sucker is filled with pins, and a 7.0x55 is also filled with pins. I had an 8mm Mauser case or round that's, I think, also filled with pins. So
that's funny. Just sit there and shake them until they all come out. That won't take you long.
I tried to fill. Yeah, I actually was contemplating drilling the hole a little bigger, the flash hole a little
bigger. Just take your hacksaw, cut off the back, dump them out, and then just weld it back on.
That will.
Or duct tape. Duct tape will be fine.
Cleaning it. Yeah. No. So, what else? Last night, Kyle Marconi and I got on Skype, and we went through his IPSC belt. He finally got his gun. Bought a CZ 75 or 85. I think it's 75. And he's got a Sierra Speed belt and Mag pouches. So he wanted just a little advice on how to set that up. And as a result, I ended up changing my holster location. So when I got home from work today, I did some dry fire practice in the dark. We got a day, almost a full day off today because the power was out up here for so long. They canceled school and sent us home. So came home and did some dry fire practice with my Eagle, getting ready for the Spring Bang match in Halifax. So that should be a good time. Yep. I think I tried to talk you into coming, didn't I?
You did. You tried. It didn't work. Didn't take. I try not to go to Halifax if I can help it.
Okay. right now I'm going to give a quick review of my Steyr M9. I bought this from Rossinator out in Calgary. And it is an interesting little pistol, and it is a little pistol. It actually is kind of similar to a Steyr M9. Steyrs are made in Austria. This is a
same place as the Glock, right? So it's basically a Glock.
It is basically a Glock, Matthew, but it's what a Glock wants to be when it grows up, apparently.
Right.
One or two, suppose this is a YouTube rumor, one or two of the engineers that used to work at Glock left Glock and went to work for Steyr, and they designed this pistol. So it's like Glock 19 size. It actually has quite a bit of barrel protruding out of the front of the slide to make it kind of Canadian edition, if you will. Because if you look online at pictures of Steyrs, they don't have that barrel sticking out the front of the slide. So that's kind of interesting.
Well, it's nice that they did that for Canada.
Yeah, yeah. There's not a lot of them in Canada, but they are out there. So,
yep.
You know, even though it's small and compact, it is pretty heavy for its size. It has a wide slide and an internal frame that removes much like a SIG P320's internal frame. It comes out as one unit. And so I think that contributes to the weight, the fact that there's a lot of metal inside the plastic frame of the gun, where the Glock just has, you know, four little steel rails kind of impregnated into the plastic or embedded into the plastic and a trigger bar that comes out. And the internals of the Glock are a lot simpler or less, I don't know, simpler, but there's not enough, not as much material inside the Glock as there is in this or in the SIG. It feels a lot heavier than a Glock, but I weighed them before the show, and the Glock comes out at 26.3 ounces, and the Steyr comes out at 26.8 ounces. So that's insignificant. But
look, 0.5 of an ounce. I mean, that's a lot. Really.
Yeah. Well, I really suspected more. I expected at least an ounce, but no, not at all. But you compare that to the SIG P320, it weighs in at 28.7. So I'm dying to shoot that thing. I think I will shoot it before the weekend's over because it's big, full size, heavy. Yep. It's going to absorb that little 9mm recoil so nice. I mean, anyway. So working my way down from the top to the bottom, the serrations on the slide are only on the rear, and they're not exactly aggressive. You've got to make sure you got a hold of the slide when you're racking it because they're there, but that's it. They're just there.
Right.
The sights that come on it, you've got two options. Mine has what they call the trapezoidal sights, and I like them. You've got that triangular front sight and kind of a triangle in the back, so you're lining up two triangles as opposed to a notch and a post. You can get notch and post night sights for this gun if you don't like those, but I like the trapezoid sights. I have shot it before, shot this exact gun actually at the Calgary Shooting Center, and so... Clearly, you know, if you don't shoot there, you are a communist.
I too have fired a Steyr. It wasn't an M9. It was the 40 cal version. So I don't know. Is that just called the M40?
I think so.
But I shot that and it had the trapezoidal sights and they were interesting and they worked quite well. I don't know if I would go to it as my go-to sighting system just because I'm so used to the post and notch. But, you know, with just a little bit of adjustment time, they worked very well. I printed some very nice groups with that gun.
Yeah, I couldn't see myself switching over my other guns. It's not that outstanding, but it is novel, but it does work. So yeah, There's nothing wrong with it. Other controls on the gun are low profile, like the slide lock is low profile. But like the SIG, it's in an excellent location, and I can reach it, and I can manipulate it with my little hobbit thumb. So that's important. There's absolutely nothing ambidextrous on this gun, and there's nothing reversible on this gun. But
Wait. Is the trigger ambidextrous?
Yeah, I suppose that
technically,
is.
Yeah. I'm just, yeah. You know, don't want to be a nitpicker. Don't want to be that guy. Wait. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do. It actually has two loaded chamber indicators, which is neat. It's got a tactile one at the back of the slide, so there's a little below the rear sight and above the back plate. There's a nub that protrudes, and you can feel it with your thumb, so that's cool. So you can know if the gun's loaded without having to, you know, if you're in poor lighting conditions. There's also a port that you can see at the back of the chamber, much like an MMP. The frame, the grip texture on the frame is subtle. There is a nice rail, a Picatinny-style rail in the front for mounting lights and whatnot.
Scopes and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, freaking laser beams. So... But the texture, some might prefer a more aggressive texturing, so you could either stipple it if you're brave and daring, or you could always add some grip tape to it, I suppose. It
that's does have... In my opinion, that's the better way to do it, because that's removable, yep. And it doesn't impact the value. If you want to
some
sell it again.
Some people may pass on it, that's right, yeah. Yep. That's
I wouldn't, Tommy personally, I wouldn't buy this. A stippled gun, personally.
No,
I
would. That's why Tommy stuck with his Glock 19 for life, and I know they made fun of him when he said that it hurt his hand, but I shot that gun at Mag 40, and it does hurt your hand. The stippling is just currently, I don't know if he's fixed it, but it was initially at the time anyway, still too aggressive. So it has a finger groove, much like where you would find a finger groove on the pistol grip on an AR, just that one. It doesn't have the two like on a Glock, but there is one there. So for people that like that, it's there. The grip.
Yeah. I believe the is grick, what you're going for, the grip.
The grip angle is similar to a Glock, but a bit more pronounced, a bit more... It's
so steeper. more lugery then.
More lugery. When I pop the pistol out, the front sight is way high. I have to tip the muzzle down to line up the front sight and the back sight.
Right.
After a couple of repetitions, that's fine. I get a little bit of a rhythm going, and I don't have to do that. Now the SIG, for example, if I've been shooting my Glock or playing with my Glock, I pick up the SIG. When I pop it out on target, present it, the front sight is low, and I have to bring the muzzle up. So the grip angles really affect how I present the gun to target. All these polymer guns that I've been buying lately and all these guns that I've been playing with, the Glock is still the most instinctive for me. I still find it fits my hand the best. I still like where the slide, the bore axis on this is, on the Steyr is very low, but on the Glock it's as low, and the Glock is still outstanding as far as how it fits my hand and how I point it. But back to this, the mag release on this particular one, this is a Gen 2, and they've got three or four gens out there right now. There's different ways of telling what gen is what. I won't get into that, but the mag release on this particular generation, the Gen 2, is very small, and it's not on the side of the grip. It's towards the front of the grip, handy to the trigger guard. So not only is it small, it's not where I think it should be. And it's quite hard to push. It's got a really heavy spring in there. So I did some dry fire practice with it out of the holster, mag changes out of mag pouches and stuff, and I didn't fumble once. I thought I would. So, you know, but I really have to break my grip and hit that button and then reacquire my grip, which costs you time. So anytime you can change the mag without manipulating your grip, obviously the better off you're going to be, because if you're not breaking your grip, you're not having to reacquire your grip. So the mag well on this gun isn't beveled at all, and is actually, it looks like somebody has pinched it and tightened it and squeezed it.
Because you want a very tight mag well so your mag doesn't fall out. You don't want it to be like easy, you know, big hole, little stick to giant. No, you want it the other way.
Yeah, it's not.
How could we make reloading a bit slower and more difficult? Let's have this set up for people with perfect eye-hand coordination, and that's it.
I think what they were going for, Matthew, was the kind of speed that you want, like on, say, a single stack 9mm 1911 type mag change.
Right.
I think that's what they were trying
because,
to
do. Because, I mean, that's really the ultimate. In, you
yeah.
know.
yeah. So, but again, when I got the gun out and ran it through a few drills and a few cycles of dry fire and mag changes, I didn't fumble. But it's not forgiving. So if you don't know how to change a mag and you don't know how to index your mag, you don't know how to look in the mag well when inserting it, when to slow down, when to speed up, you may have some troubles. You may have some bobbles. And that's not to say I'm not going to bobble. I even bobble with race guns. So
yeah.
It happens. It's just not forgiving. It's not set up to be forgiving. So, but it's not a race gun. It's a carry gun, all day long carry gun. But that, why shouldn't your carry gun be, you know, have a good mag well?
Absolutely. I mean, the Glocks have beveled mag wells. I mean, it stands to reason that if you get into a gunfight, you might need to reload. Maybe make it easy. I don't know.
Yeah, you're going to lose some eye-hand coordination or some dexterity. Your extremities are going to tremble. You know, you want forgiveness and ease of manipulation.
Yeah, if anything, you want to have more bevel. You want to have easier reloading on a hairy gun.
Exactly. So the trigger on this one is pretty neat. The gun has no external safety, of course. Why would it? The trigger safety is excellent. I like the location. I like the feel. I like how it functions. It's a better design than the Glock. As a matter of fact, my Glock 17, the trigger safety doesn't work at all. you rack the slide. Just I can grab the trigger at any time. Oh, you son of a gun. You're making a liar out of me.
Well, you didn't have to say it. It's not like anybody could see you.
Yeah,
if you had just carried on, we just would have believed you that.
Yeah. Well, it just happened to work.
So every now and then it works.
Yeah, every now and then it works, but more often than not, it doesn't.
Right.
The trigger pull on this gun is heavy. I find the break is clean. Luke was playing with it, and he thought it was a little creepy. And then
a little creepy.
But then he realized he was standing with you. So
then he realized why it was creepy.
Talking about the trigger.
Right. So,
when I went back and tried it, it almost feels like there's a rough, gritty surface in there somewhere on the sear maybe. But it's still clean. It's heavy, but it's clean. The reset is, I'd say, medium length. It's longer than the reset on the Glock, but shorter than the reset on an SR9. So it's kind of in the middle there, which is still acceptable.
It's definitely a duty reset though.
It's a very nice duty reset. Like the SR9 is all the way out.
Yeah.
Springfield SD is all the way out. This one's not all the way out.
So it's like halfway out kind of thing.
Yeah. Like I said, it's only slightly longer than a Glock. So.
Okay. That's not bad.
There's no sharp reset like a Glock, but it's certainly better than the M&P. I know one person on YouTube when I was watching reviews was critical and said that was the one thing about the trigger they didn't like, but.
If you can get used to an M&P, you'll be able to get used to anything.
There
is no reset on those things. Well, there is, but very.
Yeah, you really got to work for it.
Yeah.
The takedown, the pistol takes down super easy. It has an internal lock that is spring-loaded, and the gun originally came with a little key that you would press into the lock and then rotate it 90 degrees towards the back of the pistol, and that would put it on safe, and you wouldn't fire the pistol. Well, in order to take the pistol down, that has to be depressed. So you remove the mag, drop the striker, push that down, that little internal safety, and then there's a takedown lever, which comes straight down 90 degrees, and the slide just pops right off. It's super easy.
Just a little bit different and not intuitive. You would just have to know where that little button was and why it was there and remember to press it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's still easier to figure out than probably trying to pull the slide back a little bit and pull down those two takedown levers on a Glock.
Right.
But
you mean the ones that I can take down with one hand?
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Still easier than that. There's a video on my YouTube of me taking this down with one hand. Let's see. Almost as easy as the SIG, not quite. I think the SIG is still the easiest. Detail strip is easy, however. I figured it out on my own, which I talked about before. It's very important to me to be able to figure them out on my own. The internal lock, however, that spring I talked about, guess what? She's
gone.
Coming out of there whether you're ready or not. So beware that you've got to depress that internal lock, spring-loaded lock, to remove the internal frame of the gun. And then be aware that it's going to come flying out of there. So there are two springs you have to contend with, only two. It's not bad. It is straightforward and easy. You don't have to take it out to clean it, but I took it out to give it a thorough cleaning because all these guns are going to do like a 1,000 or 2,000 round challenge like you did with your SR9 that time.
Yep.
See if I can go, you know, I'm going to keep track of the ammo I put through them before I get a failure, right? So I sure. wanted to have it, you know, fully cleaned beforehand.
Makes sense.
So, you know, every, you know, maybe once a year, if you use the gun on a regular basis, you would take that out, but yeah. So the internal structure is simple enough. I'd say it's not as simple as a Glock, but it could be, however, that I've been working with Glocks for so long that everything seems more complicated to me.
Yeah, just because you're used to that particular style.
Exactly, and it may not be that they're more complicated than Glocks. It just could be that I've
you're
been
not
working
used
with
to it
so long. Yeah. So a couple of concerns I have about the gun is they're available in Canada, obviously, because I have one, but they are pricey. The only dealer I could find them at right now is Wanstalls. And it's the L, not the M. So it's the long slide version, closer right. to the 17. Mm-hmm. $789 before taxes.
Ouch.
And mags are $60 a pop.
Oh, that's expensive.
Yeah. So due to the lack of popularity, there's little market support for this pistol as far as aftermarket parts or even factory parts are concerned. They're not carried by a lot of different dealers. So if the gun breaks, I'll have to find a dealer that stocks them and then see if they can bring me in the part. It's not like I can go to the Glock store and have the parts here in 10 days, right?
Yeah.
That's, you know, there are better options out there than the Glock, but it's one of the things that you can't deny about the Glock is serviceability and availability of product, both yep. factory and aftermarket. So,
yep, absolutely.
Followed by the Glock, probably then the
1911.
And then the SIG, and then my Steyr last. But even now, I'm trying to find an extended mag release for my M&P, and Brownells doesn't have a factory extended one. At least I can't find it on their website. So, so that's it for that. I'm looking forward to shooting it. I'll have it at your place.
So am I. I'm looking forward to shooting it.
Well, when I get to your place, I'll have all of these, and my FNS long slide will be here on Monday. And then I'm putting a Smith & Wesson SD9VE on layaway. This is cheap. I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Again, it was supposed to be the SR9, and I went with the FN. Then it was supposed to be the SR9, and I went with this SD. And that's because I know the SR9, and I probably will add one to the collection.
But these ones are new. You haven't had them before, so you might as well try them out. You got a chance to get one.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I mean, this gun is cheap. It's like $400. Maybe even less than it's somewhere between $350 and $370, depending on what dealer you find it at. So it's not a high end pistol. The reason why I want it is because it's prohib size,
right?
With an extended barrel. So if you see them, there's some on the EE right now. Of course, Calgary Shooting Center. You know, if you don't shop there, you're a communist. Two guys walked in last week from Regina and said that's Jeff. If any nice. Of the listeners are listening, if you could go stand in front of the entrance to the Calgary Shooting Center with a sign, just take a piece of paper and a Sharpie and write, Calgary Shooting Center, if you don't shop here, you're a communist. If you could take that and post it to our Facebook wall, I will send you a prize.
Wow.
What else?
Wish I lived closer.
Yeah, I'd do that just for the prize. I don't know what the prize is, but I want it.
I don't know what the prize is either. It's not going to be anything special. You tell you what. I'll send the listener who does this when we do our next run of t-shirts. The first listener to stand outside the Calgary Shooting Center, and you cannot be an employee, by the way. The first listener who is a customer of the Calgary Shooting Center that stands outside the door and says, Calgary Shooting Center, if you don't shop here, you're a communist. Piece of bristle board with a magic marker. When we do our next run of t-shirts, I'll send you a t-shirt. How's that?
You have to pay for it, but he'll send it to you.
I'll cover the shipping. Yeah. So back to the SD. The SD, unfortunately, is not black. It's two-tone, stainless slide, stainless barrel. It's no frills. It's as basic a striker-fired gun as you can get. But what it is, they updated the Sigma by adding some M&P technology to it, I think is the best way to describe it. But still a knock. It's still a Glock clone. Takes down like a Glock and everything.
So they polished a turd?
Yeah. I mean, it's $400. That's all they did.
I put a bit of light coating of shellac on that and send it out the door.
Yeah, give it a new name. Call it Sigma's Revenge or something.
There you go.
Yeah.
So cool. I look forward to another report on that once you get it in.
Yeah, well, it'll be the FN first. That one's going to be a ways off because I got some other stuff to pay for and a match to go to and stuff. So.
Right. That's all right.
Yeah, it'll be a month before I get that one.
It'll keep.
Yeah. Okay. How about I'm going to grab the upcoming events, and Matthew, will you take the news story?
Sure, I'd love to.
All right, upcoming. Well, go. That's what we're doing.
I did a holster review. Remember the holster review I talked about?
Yeah, for your video on the channel, yeah.
It wasn't posted.
Yeah.
And now it's posted.
So you posted a video.
Yeah, so I posted a video. I had a gun in it.
You need to slow down. You're going to burn yourself out. You do too much.
Look, if you want to maintain your namesake of Mike Dixon, you really need to kind of...
cut back a little bit.
Oh, dude, yeah. You're going way too fast.
All right.
Oh. Okay,
upcoming events.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the first upcoming event is Luke Giroux is going to be a NFA field officer for the Moncton area, where we worked that out today, myself and Robert Bracken. I'm the provincial coordinator for New Brunswick for the NFA. Robert Bracken is the board of director for either the Maritimes or Atlantic Canada. I would assume it's Atlantic Canada because apparently we don't have enough members in any one province here to get our own seat on the board, which, you know, whatever, it is what it is for now. Sign up, people. Get me on the board. God. Anyway, so between Robert and I, we got Luke on his road to NFA Happy Time Fitness and Service. So. That's cool. An upcoming event. It hasn't happened yet, but it's going to. The fifth annual charity shoot, June 27th. All proceeds going to the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. We're working on Steve Lee, and now we're working on Paul Carlson. So, Paul.
Yeah. Come on, Paul.
Since you're a listener. And Brian Bolivar wants Paul to teach a class the day after the charity shoot, which would mean that Matthew would be on his way to the airport to pick up Tommy, which Bolivar's fine with, but I kind of think it's a problem. Anyway, and we can't. There's just too many classes, not enough people, not enough money. It'd still be awesome to have Paul up here to hang out with us and be a celebrity at the charity shoot and talk about what a great pistol the AR-51 is. we'll keep you posted on Paul's status. The practical armed response course with Tommy Nelson is a go. If you want to sign up for it, he's taking money on the PARA website right now. The details of the class are posted. The directions to the link to the Rushbridge Gun Club's website is there, where there's information on the club and how to find us. If you want to register, you got to do two things. You got to notify us, and then you got to pay Tommy. Don't just pay Tommy, because between Tommy and I, we're going to manage the list. Well, between Tommy and Slamfire, we're going to manage the list of students. Matthew, when you and talked to Tommy in a couple of minutes, was there a number given on how many students?
I believe there was. It was 12.
12 kids. All right. So, sign up, people. 12 plus us or 12 including us?
I didn't ask.
Okay. So sign up anyway.
I'm assuming it's 12 including us. Okay. I think that's correct, yeah.
All right.
Because it was 12 plus us last year, and it was a little busy.
Yeah, we got to flip a coin to see which one of you two is going to help them this time, because I helped them last time, and this time I want to be a student. So,
all right, I got a two-headed coin around here somewhere.
Perfect. SummerSlam. SummerSlam will take place on the 8th and 9th of August, and registration should be open sometime soon. The stages have been sent away for final approval and all that. Well, not final approval, but Sean's final approval, the president of IPSC Canada. The NFA AGM, McClatchy and I will be there. That's May 23rd, 24th in Quebec City. Come out, stop by, say hi. And now I believe, Matthew, you're going to play a little promo.
I am.
If you will.
Hey, gang, this is Masad Ayoub. I'm here to tell you to take yourself and ideally your kids and your grandkids to an Appleseed Project shooting event. It's about history, it's about pride in your country, and not incidentally, it's about marksmanship and having a whole lot of fun. I hope to see you there.
So play it.
I just did. Weren't you listening?
Yeah, I know that voice anywhere.
I know him.
I met him. I didn't. That's me being Trevor and creepy.
Oh, yeah. I'd totally stalk him if it wouldn't end in my death.
Yeah, that basically is how that would go down.
Yeah. You again. So. All right, McClatchy.
Yes.
Bring us some I want to say awesome. It's not awesome. It's not awesome news. Some people think it's awesome news. I don't think it's awesome news. It's new. Here's what's awesome about it. It's finally here.
Yep. We waited long enough, but it's finally here. Yep. So this is a story on the High River atrocities that took place a couple years ago. So if you don't know, a town in Alberta called High River flooded, and then the RCMP kicked down a bunch of doors and basically confiscated firearms they weren't supposed to confiscate. There was a huge outcry from this, of course, and finally there has been a review, and the report has been now issued, and so I'm going to read the news story that goes into that a little bit. RCMP officers acted outside of the law when they conducted warrantless searches and seizures of firearms during the southern Alberta floods of 2013, according to an independent report. The seizures angered many residents of High River, just south of Calgary. The report, issued by Commission Chair Ian McPhail, that's an awesome name, unfortunately. McPhail.
McPhail a lot?
Hey, McPhail, can you... I shouldn't make fun of him. I'm just going to call him Ian from now on. So anyway, they found in the instances where RCMP members entered homes to look for flood survivors, their actions were lawful. However, once inside the homes, RCMP members discovered firearms and contraband, and with insufficient supervision and guidance from senior RCMP officers or any judicial oversight, performed warrantless searches and seizures of firearms from some of the evacuated homes. Mounties claim that they don't need warrants to seize firearms and that they only seized guns that were unsecured or improperly stored and in plain view. McPhail's report says that that is not the case. In a number of instances, RCMP members seized firearms that were properly secured or that were not in plain view. In these cases, the firearms were not removed with lawful authority. The report also points out that while officers may have been justified in entering homes initially to search for survivors, subsequent visits to seize guns amounted to illegal, warrantless searches. McPhail's report lauds the Mounties for the good work they did in finding people stranded in the flood, rescuing pets, or retrieving other items, but the report points out that these good works do not absolve the RCMP from going beyond what is legally allowed. In several cases, the searches exceeded their authorized scope by expanding from a search for people and or pets to a search for firearms or contraband. The commission interviewed residents who had moved their lawfully owned guns to higher levels of their home to protect them from the floodwaters, yet despite hiding the guns under sleeping bags, linens, and the like, returned home to find the police had taken the firearms. The Mounties claimed that their seizures were justified by Section 489 of the Criminal Code, allowing police to seize items found in plain view while conducting a lawful search. In some cases, the report indicates that guns were seized in this manner and in compliance with the law, but slams the police force for failing to follow through on their legal requirements by reporting what was seized to a judge. Absent a warrant, RCMP members were obligated to report their seizures to a justice pursuant to Section 489.1 of the Criminal Code. The judicial oversight component of the seizures cannot be overstated in the context of police officers taking personal property from a home, the report states. The commission is not authorized to recommend criminal charges or sanctions against the RCMP members that broke the law. Instead, the report recommends better training in dealing with emergency situations, better communications, and developing a policy for dealing with firearm seizures in future disasters. The RCMP has not responded to the report publicly.
Okay, better training? Frontline officers, in a lot of these cases, were following orders. When they were sent back, they did an initial sweep, rescued a few people and a few pets, but they went back, and they went back specifically for firearms. And it's known that they kicked in doors of homes that had firearms and didn't kick in doors of homes that didn't have firearms. And when they went back in specifically for the firearms, that's not the frontline officer. That's not a training issue. That's somebody up above that needs to be trained. Somebody made some bad calls. And now, of course, the guys who kicked in the doors are looking like the bad guys. They were, you know.
But yeah, you're right. The frontline officers are much the same. You know, if I can use the example of an infantry soldier, they do what they're told from the higher ups. They're not the. I mean, the yes, they have the ability to make decisions on their own based on, you know, certain things. They have discretionary powers, if you will. But if the upper echelon says, "Go back and take those guns that you saw," well, they basically got to. They got to go do it. They got to obey. Yeah. So, you know, this is not necessarily against the officers who did this. This is against the RCMP brass who ordered them to do it. You said, Trevor, especially when they went back for them. That's the part that I have a problem with. If you're there looking for people and, oh, there's a gun leaning up against the wall that has no trigger lock, all right, take it. Yep. I mean, that's their job.
Yeah. But to then take guns that were secured,
And hidden. They were not in plain view. Yeah. If you have to move something, that's now you're searching. Now you're not observing.
And the other issue I have is if you break the law, you're going to get charged. Why is it when the people who enforce the law break the law that in cases like this, no charges are going to be filed against anybody?
The article says that the review is not authorized to submit charges, but that doesn't mean charges can't still be filed. You would just need to find a prosecutor willing to charge the RCMP with a crime, which I don't think you'll find one in Canada.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath on this.
No.
But will they do it again? Sending me to the office is one thing. If I leave the office with a suspension, that's quite different.
Yep.
So there was a review done. The review said you shouldn't have did that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then if nothing is done to correct it, somebody needs to look into the management. Or the leadership and who allowed this to happen and encouraged this to happen and or ordered this to happen, and that person needs to find a job somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, anyway. All right. Thanks for reading that. Owen, you got anything on that?
No. Sounds good.
All right. How about then, Owen, you take our first email
How about we do our main topic? I don't know.
Oh.
I'm just curious, I guess. Should we do that or not so much?
We already said we would have a main topic. Isn't that enough?
But we... Maybe. And on that note...
Yes, let's jump into our main topic with Gun Dude, para owner and instructor, Mag 40 instructor, the one, the only, Mr.
Tommy Nelson. Tom Nell. Take it away, Tom.
And here I am joining Slamfire Radio tonight on a Tuesday because no one else can do an intro. That's right. It's me, Tom Nelson.
It works. It is weird because, you know, like Owen said, Thursday night, it's hard to get into the game. Mm-hmm. It's not Thursday night. Thursday night is normal. It's Tuesday night. I don't even know what day it is.
Owen needs 30 minutes after eating before podcasting where he starts cramping up.
He just had a homemade ice cream.
Oh, and it was good.
Chocolate chip cookie dough?
Yes.
Yeah. And he didn't bring any for the rest of us.
Made by my 3-year-old.
Oh, and did she sneeze into it?
I don't think so, but I wasn't
there. I don't think so. I love it. I don't think so. Possibly. We're not going to discount that as a possibility because it probably did happen.
However, I'm pretty sure that's how the Black Plague started.
Basically, yeah. Anyway, Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for starting it off.
Yes, since the rest of us are completely inept, or at least I am. I'll be the first to admit I'm inept.
And I'll be the first to admit so is Trevor. Well, he's not here, right?
He's not even here with us.
We got to blame him for something.
He's sending arrows through the air quietly, I guess.
That's what he's doing. He's at archery.
Oh.
So, anyway.
That's how the other half live.
So he's lined up an interview and sent us to the interview.
That's what he did, yeah. Tom, can you come on tonight? Yeah. Matt and Owen, go do that with Tom, would you? I won't be there. Thanks, Trev. I had nothing else going on tonight. Actually, I didn't, but you know.
Don't let us know that. Don't let the listeners know that. You're a man of mystery. You always got something going on.
Yes. Oh, yes. No, I was so busy.
Yeah. Gonna go jitterbugging down at the club later.
How did you know? Oh, crud. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, who's leading? I don't know who to answer.
I don't know who's leading. So I was just going to say. The reason, I think we should maybe clarify for the listeners, the reason we have Tom on to talk to him tonight is because he's planning on coming back up to the Great White North this summer. It's coming warm season.
The warm season, yes.
Warm season.
Yeah.
It's remarkably mild for a guy from Utah when I go up there, because normally we have like 110 degrees Fahrenheit, 100 degrees Fahrenheit out here, which is I don't know how many degrees.
Like a billion or something in Celsius.
So like 50 or 60 degrees Celsius or something like that. Anyways, but yeah, we come up there. It's very nice. And when we're coming up again this year, it's so nice. I want to do it twice. So.
Well, and when are you coming up this time? We should maybe tell listeners that.
Well, to celebrate America's independence, I'm going to be coming up. I believe we're holding the class on the 3rd of July, and then we're going to have her on the next day on Saturday. We're going to hold it Friday, July 3rd, and then on Saturday, July 4th, I think we're going to shoot an IDPA match out there in Canada. So yeah, we're going to have a good time.
It will be fun. Yep. And those are the right dates. I just checked. So the 3rd and the 4th.
Oh, so, thank goodness.
Whoo, pulled that one off.
All I knew is I wasn't going to be barbecuing down here. That's
right. So we'll have to have some sort of fireworks display or something for you up here because, you know, we've got to celebrate. Well, I mean, Canada Day is only a couple days before that. July 1st is our celebration day. So,
hey, I'll be up there too.
Yeah, you'll be here for that as well, won't you? Because you're coming up a couple days early, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's always the best. Hanging out with you guys, that's fun.
I concur.
Listening to the French Canadians.
Well, that's not neither of us.
And movie covers.
Yeah, we got to get Jason Gallen back up.
Oh, get stories with Gallen so I can stay up till 3 o'clock on the morning.
There
night
you go.
Before a match. That's exactly what I need. And my favorite Gallen line will always be, everyone's life is just like this, but they are just too embarrassed to talk about it.
And
which I probably respond, nope.
Nope.
Yeah, nope. that's not it.
Yeah, good times. And so basically, this is one of the best times you can have this summer. And so you as a listener should be clearing your schedule and figuring out how to get to northern New Brunswick. That's just go to the middle of nowhere and take a left, and here we are. And come out and take a pistol course with Tom, because he came last year. It was really good. I think everybody learned something. We had a lot of fun, and the next day we shot a match and again had a lot of fun. So if you want to learn to run your gun better, or even if you want to learn, even if you don't, even if you just want to come out and enjoy the festivities,
if you want to come out, spend money, some bullets downrange, feel free.
Yeah. So
no, it was impressive last year. I mean, it was an okay shot, and I came and Tom started talking, and I said, well, there's not really a whole lot that's really, you know, new revolutionary here. You know, the heavens didn't open and there weren't, you know, hallelujahs and everything. But when I came out of the course, I was twice the shot I was when I went in, you know, and it was pretty neat to see that kind of transformation over the course of the day. So,
well, I think one of the main reasons, one of the obvious main reasons is Tom's a good instructor, we're not here to blow smoke up your end, Tom, so I'm going to stop it. But
it's actually kind of cleansing, so go ahead.
we
homeopathic around, medicine, that's what I'm here for.
Around here, most of the pistol instruction that anybody ever gets is their black badge course before they sign up for IPSC or when they sign up for IPSC. And so to get a different perspective on how to shoot handguns, especially from somebody who carries handgun, you know, as a self-defense tool and then also competes down in IDPA down in the States, you know, it's a different perspective from your point of view. And it was really enlightening for me. And, you know, you just taught it a different way than what's been taught up here before. And it really helps kind of solidify some of the essentials that we should all know anyway. And then you brought new stuff too. So it was great.
Yep. Yeah, practical pistol for, you know, there's always something, and that's why I kind of developed practical pistol that way, is that the first half of the day is very much you're deep into the minutia of actually trying to get the pistol to hit what you want to hit. And that's because I figured, you know, if I have to explain things three different ways when I go through it, or just kind of find, you know, analogies that work, that you'll understand how to press the trigger correctly or hold the gun correctly, that's all worth it. Or line up the sights and what kind of holds the sights. That's really worth it. That's what it's all about. The class I will be teaching up this year will be responsive handgun, which is basically the fighting end of practical pistol. Practical pistol is very much run the gun, learn how to shoot, learn how to deal with a little bit of time stress, know where your limits lie kind of at the end of the class.
I figured mine out.
Yeah, and yours, you're a dang good shot, Matthew. All of a sudden the buzzer went off, and I don't know what went on there. But but yeah, it was That's what it is. But responsive handgun is definitely the dirty part of it. The accuracy kind of degrades a little bit. We'll work on the accuracy at the beginning and get shots when we need to. But it's trying to stop people with handguns is what it's all about.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, you burn more ammo that way. That's true.
So what is what's the round count going to be?
Round count for practical pistol is somewhere right around 300 to 400 rounds of ammunition.
So if we tell everybody to bring 400, that's enough, or should we tell them to bring 500?
I would bring 5 for the match for the next day.
Okay.
And normally how I like to schedule pistol classes is I'll say 250, and maybe we'll run in somewhere around 225, 228, 230.
Right.
But plan on 400, and we'll try to keep you in the 340s area. So, but that's what we're looking at. Mainly because the fluctuation on the round counts changes because it determines on how often you want to shoot somebody. If you got low rounds, maybe just put 2 or 3 in each time. But there will be some drills where you'll need to put 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and the Canadian maximum of 10 bullets. Well, you put one in the chamber, you can get the Canadian maximum of the lucky 11.
It goes up to 11.
Yeah. And if you get certain Glock mags that are 10 rounders, you can actually put the 11 in those, I found out, and got dinged for.
Well, we can run 40 cal mags in our 9mm Glocks and get 12 or 13 in legally. So that's another way to do it, but they don't feed very well.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that because when I bought this Vertec, the guy sold me a 40 caliber Beretta magazine, and
yeah,
the feed lips are just barely enough to, like, kiss the round and keep it from leaving home.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you do one little thing, or if you drop it and you got dummy rounds, they'll pop out.
It's a volcano.
Yeah, those are dedicated dry fire magazines now, so see what happens with that. But yep.
So when you're this is going to be more of a defensive handgun course, is it going to be more of a would it be preferable for people to have concealment holsters? Are we still talking, you know, just regular, competition holsters? Because I know there was there was some competition talk in your first course.
Yeah.
So what sort of equipment and gear should people be prepared to bring, since this has a little bit of a different focus?
Practical pistol, the first class that we taught last year, that is mainly basically running the pistol. And so practical gear, competition shooting gear, that's very fine and whatever you like to use. But in the responsive handgun, definitely if you're a police officer or you drive around in an armored truck with a Safariland 6378 holster or whatever, that's going to be perfectly applicable. For me, concealed carry, I've been concealed carrying for about 10 years, so that's kind of where I like to run with responsive handgun, you know, inside the waistband holster, preferably with the light on the gun, my 2 magazine pouches. But if, you know, a battle belt in your bug out kit, or the battle belt that's sitting right by your bed that has your pistol, your ammunition, your flashlight on it, if you need that, then bring that. If that's what you're going to try to fight with, then bring that. If you're someone who's interested in the lifestyle of concealed carry and drawing from concealed carry, even though you may not have the license to do so, hey, we're on the range, you know, it's all approved, so go ahead and strap that on. It doesn't really matter. Each individual piece of equipment as far as gear and holsters has its own specific little things. Things that I don't like to see is, cross-draw behind the back type holsters, and definitely the shoulder rigs. The deal is with, shoulder rigs is one person gets to wear it, and then he gets to be put on the all the way on the left side of the line. But the second guy who wears one doesn't have anywhere place to go unless he's left-handed.
Yeah.
So that's a no-go on that. But yeah, definitely something that's going to be safe. Strong side hip mounted would be the best option. Because basically,
what about an appendix carry type? Because I've been carrying around the house sort of an appendix carry style holster now. The last couple of days, really falling in love with it. Something like that.
Appendix carry, I don't really have any issue with appendix carry, as long as the person who is running the appendix carry gun is confident and knows what's going to happen. Because that's appendix carry, Mike, in my opinion, in a classroom setting, is you're already kind of starting with 2 strikes. Because basically what happens is when you draw the gun, your arm's going to kind of want to muzzle the gun to your weak side. And so that's down the line. If you're in the middle of the line, you could flag somebody else. So you have to be very conscious of the muzzle and where it's going and where it's sweeping, straight up, straight down. And then basically you got to remember not to rotate the gun until you actually get it towards the target.
Right.
So,
okay.
But that's that's perfect. That's fine with me.
So maybe more of a you know, someone who has some experience, you know, a little more gun savvy type person. You know.
So basically, practice. It's okay for you, Owen, but nobody else. So you can.
I would just recommend
to you, but
I would just recommend if you're planning on bringing one to practice in the house, for a couple weeks, just kind of wear it around and
being very conscious of the fact that that in a class you'll be shooting with other people on a line, and so watch what you're doing when you're practicing with it, and if during the course of your draw you very naturally point the gun down the line, then maybe you need to adjust something or not wear that holster.
Yeah, and then when we run things by ourselves and we run the final drill, it'll still be perfectly fine there because there'll be no one else on the line with you. So,
all right.
It's just when you're holding your junk hostage all day, it's good to have a good idea of what you're doing.
Good point. Yeah. Good point. Don't want to shoot those.
So,
all right. So, what other sorts of things are you going to be covering? I mean, you know, I don't want you to give away your whole course, obviously, but it's just generally probably a lot of drawing from the holster type stuff.
Drawing from the holster in awkward positions. There'll be a whole ground series. Supine
like first
back.
Date situation kind of like that sort of awkward.
it's not couples ground series on the ground.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Just twister. I don't need the baby oil on the twister mat for ground.
People, well, you did say awkward, and I think we nailed it.
Yeah. But there'll be a ground series off the guns, and local range, when I've taught this, it's pretty nice because we've had like a 340 degrees area. So basically we take one student, I can stand at its head, and I can put, you know, six targets around them and make them move the gun around to shoot those. But there's a way to do it in the classroom setting. So, on our sides, on our back, supine, we'll be shooting the guns from there. Learning how to draw the guns from there, if it's even slow or if we need to react to something. Other things will be definitely the one-handed gunfighting will be a significant part of the day. Most gunfights we see are one-handed. In the concealed carry situation, either we're on the phone, law enforcement officers are on the radios, and sometimes we're just trying to pull and push people out of the way. Even loved ones, we're grabbing their arms, slinging them behind us, and trying to move into a safe direction. So being able to gunfight one-handed is a survival skill that you absolutely need, and you need to be able to deliver shots with that.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, a lot of people don't think about that, but it's true. And I watch some concealed carry shooting videos, and, you know, just to kind of get an idea of what's going on and maybe learn something from it. And a lot of it is, it's one-handed stuff. Like, you're right. They've got something in their other hand already, or they're pushing somebody out of the way, or they're grabbing somebody or whatever. Maybe they're even fighting somebody else off with that other hand. And so they don't have much, you know, you got no chance to get that second hand on there and to get a good, stable shooting platform. So,
yeah, the one thing about one-handed gunfighting is that people don't realize is that holding the gun in a proper, like, isosceles stance, all you have to do is add one other task you need to do, and you have to break that stance down.
Yep.
I got to open a door, I got to break the stance down. If I got to go grab somebody, I got to go break the stance down. If I got to call for help, I got to break the stance down. Or heaven forbid, it's low light and I got to go grab my flashlight, all of a sudden it's back to one-handed gunfighting. There are some techniques that get you partly there, but still getting you partly there. There's no good handheld technique that's going to give you 100% of that firing grip that you're used to. So compromised grips is another thing. Survival manipulations will be another big part. And hopefully,
what's a survival manipulation?
One-handed stuff. Weak hand, I need to reload the gun while I have my strong hand down. So what do I do with the gun? How do I reload the gun? How do I cycle the slide?
Right.
So make sure you got
sturdy sights is what you're saying.
Yes,
sturdy
nice
sights. Sturdy sights, something that's flat.
I say that's what Trigicon night sights.
Right, yeah.
Those ones I have on my Glock are awesome for that. And I got that nice flat shelf on the front of the rear sight.
Yep.
For hooking and on a belt or something like that.
Yeah, I've practiced with mine already too, just to see what it's like, and it works really well.
Yeah, the snag-free Novax on your 1911 may not be a good call.
Oh, guys, I can't get this one to... Yeah, it's snag-free, numpty.
But the cool thing is with those 1911s, if you don't have a full-length guide rod and you got a table nearby, you can just stick underneath the barrel and kind of rack it that way.
Right.
So they're good for something.
Even if it is just a paperweight at times.
Yeah. So we'll be doing a little bit of that, and then we're going to play a little bit of some mental games with people at the end of the day, and we'll have a good time, and hopefully we'll get somewhat tuckered out.
Sounds like fun. I'm in.
Yes. Yes, this is.
So if people want to sign up for this, we're doing it differently this year, as I understand it. They're going to be contacting you directly. Is that correct, Tom?
So if people want to sign up, we'll have it on paradashtraining.com. If you'll go to like courses and you'll see upcoming classes, just scroll down and you'll find it right there. Go ahead and sign up. It'll be $200 U.S. because I am a citizen of the United States of America, and it makes
it
easier.
So that's 9,000 Canadian.
$9,000 Canadian.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you do it there, and the cool thing is that you'll be able to use your PayPal or you'll be able to use your credit card, and so it skips the middleman of converting them for us all. And
yeah, well, it saves me a headache too, because I had to take care of all that stuff last year, and it was a bit of a pain, especially with the conversion rates and stuff. So we'll just send it directly to Tommy, and you won't have to have me responsible for your money anymore.
Yep. And if you have any other problems with that, I guess you can just contact Matthew, and then we can give him some headaches again.
There we go. That'll be fun. Yeah, I mean, if you have any sort of issue and you want to come and we got to figure it out one way or another, we will figure it out. Just contact us, and we will take care of it.
Yep. Awesome. We're going to try to limit this class to about 12 students. So
12. What were we at last year?
I think we were at 14 or 15.
Yeah, that was a little bit. Little bit busy, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of people on that line.
Yep.
So
12, first come, first serve. And yep. Three spots are taken already, so better hurry.
Oh, no, I got to teach the class, so I guess just three.
Yeah, no, you're the instructor, Tom. Thanks for remembering. Wait, yeah. Why do we have you on here anyway?
And so if you guys also want, check out the IDPA website and check out the rule book. Be brushed up on that, because the next day we're going to set up a IDPA classifier, which is a three-stage classifier, and then we're going to set up three normal IDPA stages. So you'll actually get to see where you stand in IDPA.
Wait, we're actually running IDPA the next day? I thought it was just another IPSC match.
Nope. Me and Trevor want to run IDPA. I got to have a sporting chance, man. I'm too old. I can't be jumping around with the Puma Matthew McClatchy over here.
Oh, come on. I needed some sort of advantage. I had to actually get out and actually practice with my gun now instead of just running laps and doing sprints.
Yeah, that's what makes you better, because me and Trevor shot this one stage competitively, and we had to go up a flight of stairs, you know. And I do stairs one step at a time, like a safe American. Like and Matthew starts on step 5, and then the second step, he's already out the second floor. And he beat me and Trevor by like 6-7 seconds, and I was just like, you know what, I can't shoot fast enough. I can't make up that many splits.
Matthew, faster than a speeding bullet.
Yeah. So IDPA should even it out, because I think I beat Matthew in IDPA scoring if we
shot
it
you
that
did.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll give it another. And if I didn't have Trevor's ammunition that kept malfunctioning on me, I had 3 gut bullets that didn't go off, and I lost Trevor by 6 seconds.
Yeah, you would have beat him probably. You'll beat him this time maybe.
No, I never say I'm gonna beat Trevor, because you guys will always surprise me. So I'm not gonna.
Well, that's the thing. No, if you, yeah. See, I was doing that for Trevor actually, because Trevor is somebody who steps up to a challenge. So if I say you're gonna beat him, then he'll be like, nah.
Nah, that's not gonna happen. I'll make him shoot IDPA with his bow.
That'd be fun too. We should send him that link to that video of that crazy guy jumping around. He loves that. He doesn't love that. I'm kidding. So please send him that video.
Get it at his personal email.
Yeah, it's trevor.furlott@gmail.com. Send away, folks. Flash mob, Trevor. Send him that video link right now. The new Legolas. He loves it. He just thinks it's the greatest thing ever. He's like cursing at his computer right now listening to me. It's great. So IDPA the next day, I'm going to have to learn to shoot a little bit slower then, I guess, because I'm used to my feet making up the difference for me, so I'm going to have to shoot a bit slower and a bit more accurately, and I'll start practicing that.
We tell you where you can and you can't shoot from, Matthew, so...
Oh, see, that's even worse.
Prepare to get ready.
I won't even do it, probably. Actually, I probably would if I do it. I would just shoot it the way I normally would shoot it.
See, the problem with that is there, Owen, is that we have things called failures to do rights.
Yeah.
After we realize that you're not doing it, they ask, "Well, big 20-second penalty later, you're going to start caring pretty quick.
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't do it. It would be sort of like how I usually shoot IPSC, which is I shoot it how I want to shoot it, and I don't really care about the score. You know, I shoot it the way I practically would shoot it in real life. I don't shoot it according to the rules. Well, I mean, I follow the rules, but...
You follow the rules, but you don't necessarily shoot it in...
I don't shoot it to, you know, okay, I'm going to shoot these targets first because...
It's faster.
They're, you know, they're farther away, and it'll gain me a few seconds. No, I'm going to shoot it the way I would shoot it if it was real life. And
well, the good thing about IDPA, Owen, is now we have moving reloads back, which you have to shoot from cover, and just like when you said, we have something called a tactical priority, which means if you're leaning out from the right side of cover, you have to engage the brightest most target because that's the first one that appears. And then you have to keep pieing the corner. And then also, if it's an open area, you have to engage closest to farthest. So
And that makes sense.
It does make sense. You should not be able to lean out, stand out in the open, engage whatever target you want. You got to, you know, try not to get shot. That's the principle behind IDPA. It's the only one that's actually really defensively based.
Well, IPSC's more geared towards the slow zombies, if you will. You just kind of stand out in the open and just headshot them as they come shuffling towards you.
And then run like crazy to the next ones.
Right.
Yeah, so IDPA is a blast, and, you know, it's a good game, but you have to be very, very accurate at it. It's pretty much like shooting IPSC in a minor or USPSA in a minor. You got to get all them A's. And the scoring system actually makes sense, because honestly, when I've been shooting USPSA, I've shot a couple matches, and I do not know how to get better besides shoot faster and more accurately. When they say, well, this is your hit factor, I kind of go, okay.
And that means what?
That means I got to make up how much time on the next stage? You know, if I sit there and shoot an IDPA stage, I got to make up 3 seconds on the stage.
Yeah, it makes sense in IDPA. You're right. Yeah. It's just simple time, right? Your score is your time.
Your raw time, and then your hits outside the down zeros, it's for every point down, you're half a second added to your time.
Yeah.
So
it's very simple to figure out.
Yeah. But the bad thing is, if you smoke a non-threat now, for every bullet you put in, you do get 5 seconds added.
For every bullet? I mean, if you killed them on the first one, what's the second one matter?
We used to be able to shoot them once and then keep shooting them, and we'd only get the 1 5-second penalty, but that's changed now. So they stack up.
That's crazy. I mean, once they're down, really.
Once they're suing you, they're suing you.
That's
what does it matter?
Dead men don't sue.
Deadman's wife sues. That's what happens.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. I hope you give it a fighting chance there, Owen.
All right.
Well, I know I will, and so will Trevor. We're going to try to give you a run for your money, Mr. IDPA Master.
Master in stock service pistol.
Oh, there you go. You are a master then. So are you going to start talking like Yoda then? Because you're a master now.
No, I'm only a master in stock service pistol, which is, it used to be the easiest one to get into, but then they changed the times. So, but I have qualified under the new times, so I can say I'm a master at that.
Well, there you go. So what are you going to use for a gun when you come up?
I really want to bring up my Berettas.
Yeah.
The Glock, as far as sighting it in, I did not think that having a different slide on a different frame would bring that big of a change of impact,
but it did.
And damn that Trevor. So what is it? I took that one shot, and then what? I warmed up a little bit after, and I found out where it was holding, and I just rung him in.
Yep.
And
I remember asking you, do you want a couple sliders? Because you didn't get any. You're like, no, I'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll be all right. Yeah, I'll be all right. That's what you do. Oh, well, I wanted a student to win.
Right.
So, you know, that's...
Yeah, but Trevor technically wasn't a student.
Yeah, I know, helper, Matt. Would you just let me out of this? Just let me get out of this, would you?
It's funnier my way.
So, yeah, it's fine. But, yeah, I'd really like to come up and bring my Berettas up.
Well, that'd be cool. Start looking into the paperwork then. I don't think it's much. Bringing guns into Canada is a lot easier than bringing guns into the U.S., so I think maybe it's the other way around.
Yeah, good luck with that.
It's not hard to take the U.S., so.
You know. I'll just call it into the sheriff, and then when I cross customs, I'll actually, are you bringing any weapons in? I'll say, yes, ma'am. Lots of them.
Cool. So. Well, good luck with that. We'll see if we can help with that paperwork and send you down the right road.
Right on, guys.
Possibly. So anyway, thanks for joining us. Oh, wait, it's Owen. Owen, you do this.
Oh, me do this?
Yeah.
Do
or Tom, you should actually sign us off here.
Yes.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
You started it.
It's been a pleasure being here and hosting myself on your guys' podcast.
It has been a pleasure.
I'll see myself out. Thank you very much.
Yeah, don't let the door hit you, would you?
Right on, guys. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Well, wow. Thanks, Tom, once again. Sorry, Trevor, this is your job, apparently.
I thought it was. I thought it was the lead host. I went back and I checked. Oh,
it is you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, thanks, Tom. All right. Owen, you going to do anything this week on the Warriors Ethos project? You got anything to contribute this week? Something new you want to discuss? Or are we moving that along or what?
Do you want me to?
Of course.
I wouldn't have brought it up. I just would have said, let's do listener feedback, which I actually said.
Which you did earlier.
So many times that I'm kind of not believing that it could actually happen.
It's happening, man. It's all real. Right. It's happening. It's happening now.
Well, this was kind of a result.
Are you prepared for this?
Not really, but I am a little bit prepared. I'm surrounded by props that nobody can see. So
there's no way to talk about Matthew.
I'm editing you out of the show.
Well, this is kind of, actually, we had a listener kind of do a request for more of this, of prepping type stuff.
But it was so long ago, he's since gone to a senior's home.
Probably. Or stopped listening. But anyway, I thought what I would like to do is maybe not every week, but every week or every couple weeks have some little topic.
When we have time and we allow it is what you're trying to say.
Basically, when I'm allowed to come out of the corner and talk for a few minutes. And this, since I don't do my own podcast anymore, this was kind of tie into that. And a lot of this stuff will be things that I talk about maybe on my blog. I'd like to do a video, and I have intentions of doing a video on the topic I'm going to talk about now on Mylar storage, for food mostly, food storage. So that way everything I talk about, you'll be able to see in a video, and I'll post that video on the Facebook page and all that. But I don't have that video done yet. It's on my list. Mylar storage. So what is it? Mylar is a material.
I know. It's the storing of Mylar.
That's right. Mylar storage is the storing of Mylar. Yes. Very important.
Sweet. I got this prepper thing down.
It's a material that is waterproof, oxygen proof. And you can buy it. Bags, and it comes in all different formats. But generally, when you talk about food storage, you're talking about Mylar bags. There's two main components that destroy food, or the quality of food, and that's moisture and oxygen. Those are the two things that cause it to deteriorate and go bad. So when you're talking about storing food, primarily dry goods, for long periods of time, you need something that's going to prevent both of those elements from getting at your food. So, Mylar bags, the one I have here is, I think, a 1 gallon. They kind of do it by gallons, as far as how much it will store. This is a 1 gallon, and it has a Ziploc on the top. But you can get them without the Ziploc, and you can get them all. I also have some, I think, 5 gallon ones that go down inside a 5 gallon pail for storing stuff in bulk. 1 gallon are nice because you can pull out one of these, and it's not a huge amount of food that would take you months and months to eat up. So the process of sealing is you put in your food, you put in your oxygen absorbers, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and usually use a fairly, like a corner. Like I use the corner of my granite countertop, but you could use a level or a piece of metal or anything like that, or just something, a flat, hard surface, and use an iron. Like you use to iron your shirts and
my shirt.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Who does that anymore?
That your wife would iron your shirts with. And
still laughing. I don't even know if there's an iron in this house. I mean,
well, I don't know. We do have one here, but
but it's just for food storage. That's all
we use
it for.
Food storage. That's all we use it for. And you just iron the top of the Mylar and it seals it up. And because the Ziploc is not enough, and some of them don't have Ziplocs on them. And then when you want to go use it, you would just cut below where it's ironed together and open it up. So it's pretty straightforward. So that's one component. The other important component is removing the oxygen that is in the bag mixed in with your food. So yes, no new oxygen can get at it, but there's oxygen in there when you pour in your food. Let's say you're storing, I don't know, macaroni. Well, macaroni has holes all through it. It's got oxygen all through each piece. You know, and in, you know, beans, rice, those sorts of things are common for storage in Mylar for long term. And they have, you know, there's air mixed in around the food. So what you do is you buy something called an oxygen absorber, which is essentially iron oxide in a little packet. Looks like one of those silica packets that you get stuffed in everything you buy now. Sort of similar to that. And they come in all different shapes and sizes for different size, storage amounts. So I believe one of these 1 gallon bags, I use one 500 cc packet per bag. And the 5 gallon ones, I was using four. So I was going about 2000 cc's per bag. And the idea is once they hit, they'd absorb oxygen and they absorb it and hold it. The iron oxide, and they heat up. So this is the same thing. If you don't want to order a bunch of oxygen absorbers, you can buy hand warmers, those one-time use hand warmers, and it's exactly the same thing. You rip it open, you give it a shake, and it heats up. Well, this does the same thing. When it's just absorbing that oxygen, and it's a reaction, a chemical reaction in the inside that causes it to heat up. So this is the same thing. And as Matthew can see, but nobody else can see, I have a 1 gallon bag of rice here that has been sealed.
And he does. He's actually holding it up. I can see it. There it is. It's beautiful. I'll hold my microphone up to it. There.
And, I mean, it is a solid. I mean, I guess I can dent it a little bit if I hit it with my fist, but.
It's almost, it looks like it's vacuum packed.
Yeah, it is.
And so the oxygen takes up enough space that when it's absorbed, it actually sort of vacuum packs the thing.
Exactly.
I mean, the nitrogen would still be in there.
Yes.
But, a lot of the air has been taken out. Yep. Well, it's not taken out. It's in there. It's just trapped in the iron oxide. That's pretty neat. I realized that it would be absorbing the oxygen, but I didn't realize it would actually reduce the volume of the gas in the bag. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does. It basically creates almost a negative pressure inside. Nothing's going to grow in a negative
pressure.
Also
known as, I don't know, vacuum?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just curious if I had the term right there. I just wasn't sure.
So let me see. The only other thing I could really say is when you buy these oxygen absorbers, they come generally a lot to a package. I think there's like 50, I think there's 25 or 50 in this of these 500 cc's. So if you were going to do up a bunch, but you didn't need the whole package and they come all vacuum packed, obviously, because you can't just have them loose or they're absorbing oxygen, then they're no good. So they come. So if you're not going to use the whole thing, what they recommend is you take a mason jar or some sort of sealable jar, and you just throw all your extra ones in there that you don't need, and you seal it up. And it'll absorb a little bit of the oxygen that's in there, but not enough that use it. And the ones I bought actually came with a little oxygen indicator that changes color if in the presence of oxygen. So if I actually had one that went bad, it came and it hit, something had happened to the bag, and it was purple instead of pink, and I was a boy. No, so I just had an extra one of those that came with it. So I just threw it in. So I keep that in the mason jar. So if something ever happens to a mason jar and the seal breaks or something like that, I'll be able to tell, and I won't put these in any of my Mylar bags, and not have them seal. So
cool.
So that, stored this way appropriately, the food can last, they say, 25, 30 years.
So this is just short term stuff. Yeah. Not really.
So you're looking at pretty significant storage times for this. You pretty much can put it in there and
so about as long as a McCappy meal laid out in the open.
That's right.
Hey, I got a pie that's been sitting on my desk since October 2nd.
Well, it's funny. I can't remember if it was Norway or Finland or one of those countries out there. They banned McDonald's sales. And they took the very last McDonald's meal and they put it out on display. And like, I forget now if it's 5 or 10 or whatever years later, they still have it on display and it still looks like I'd eat it.
That's kind of scary.
Well, it could be. So anyway, cool. Anyway,
yeah. So I don't know whatever else. I mean, if people have questions about this, they can send me an email or whatever, and I can, answer them. But do you guys, any questions you guys can think of regarding food storage?
I've gone through it with you.
Yeah, we've talked about it, so.
No, although I did learn something. I learned about that whole removing the gas there. That was neat. That's cool. I like this corner. I think you should do it more often. I learned something.
What I usually do is I usually throw like two or three of these in a 5 gallon pail and put the top on. Then it's still they're stored in a pail, but they're easy to.
You can stack them and carry them and stuff, but it's not one great big pail of rice. It's a bunch of 1 gallon bags of rice. That way you can use it more appropriately.
Yeah, we actually even did some where we had some in each. So we had a pail that had a bag of beans, bag of rice, bag of pasta. So you could pull out one pail.
Pull out one pail and you've got a meal for a week or whatever. Yeah.
Well, it'd be multiple weeks. A gallon of rice.
You're right. A gallon a week. Yeah. It is quite a bit. You're right. Cool.
Anyway, so that's that. Hopefully the video will be forthcoming on exactly on how to do it, everything I talked about. So
I should have just videotaped while you were doing it right now. You would have had it done.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, cool, man. Thanks for that. And like Matthew, I hope we see a fairly regular stream of that kind of information working its way into the show. And even if you do like what they do over in Gun Nation, Average Joe, he's got his blog and he does a really detailed review of a gun on the blog and then gives a snippet on the show and directs people to his blog. And now you've kind of turned the Warriors Ethos thing into a project, and it's some of it's on here, some of it's on YouTube, some of it's on your Facebook page. So
it can all be found on the blog. So everything I do while, you know, your videos are on YouTube, I link everything through that blog. So I'm using the blog kind of as my website.
And the blog is, the URL is?
Is warriorsethos.wordpress.com.
Cool.
Very cool.
I try to link everything over on Slamfire Facebook page and stuff, just because I know there's a lot of crossover there.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. Are we ready to move into our email section, gentlemen?
I think so. Well, you're the boss tonight.
I wouldn't say boss. I'm directing the train wreck.
So you're the director then.
Yeah.
You're the conductor.
All right. Let's jump into it. The first one comes to us from Anonymous, and he says, "Hey guys, first off, thank you all for the work you guys do. It is really appreciated. I was listening to episode 92 where you were talking about alarm companies and them calling 911 and just wanted to share some insight I have."
It's funny. This one topic has garnered more email than almost any other topic we've ever come up. You know, this is like the third week in a row we've had an email on this. So
we actually have multiple emails this episode about this.
Very good.
A few years back, I had had a break and enter into my home. It was an eye-opening experience. Luckily, I had not gotten into real guns yet. I had not gotten into real guns yet, so all of his guns were replicas. So other than random electronics and a couple of airsoft guns, they fondled and they took one. Too tired to reach tonight. They didn't get anything truly of value from me. I learned how easily people can kick in non-hardened doors. Quick YouTube search shows how easily it is. I also realized I needed to get an alarm. A year later, around the same time of year, I was working and got a call from my alarm company saying my alarm was going off, to which I responded, "Have you called the police yet?" They advised me that they do not call the police unless two or more zones are tripped, to which I responded, "Why do I pay a monitoring fee every month to you?" After racing home and finding a secure home, I came to the realization that if the alarm company is only calling me to advise me that my alarm is going off, I may as well reprogram my alarm to just call me instead and save on the monthly on the monitoring fee. In my current position at work, I work with telecommunications. I've now heard countless stories of people with similar or worse experiences with their alarm monitoring companies. I have even tripped the alarms with customers present in a few cases to discover that the alarm company doesn't call them at all. Sorry about the long email. Hope this info can help some folks out there. I think the big takeaway here is that only you can take responsibility for your own safety and security. P.S. Sorry for any spelling mistakes. I wrote this on a phone, and if you could not say my name or location on the air this time, that would be appreciated. So apparently we may have ratted him out once before. As far as writing it on a phone, I read it on a phone.
That explains a lot.
If there were spelling mistakes, that would be like saying to a blind man, come over here and look at this. It's not going to matter to me because I won't know they're there. Alarm company stories. When I was running the Belduin Archery Club out of the Jack River School, a teacher came in once and didn't know we were in the school shooting because we were going through a side door. They went into the front door. They saw the alarm was off, didn't bother to check why, turned it on and left. So when Mr. RCMP member shows up in the gymnasium and sees 10 people there shooting bows and arrows, he thought that was kind of interesting. Oh, I see. That's what's going on. Robbery with archery. I see. No.
He's like, Robin Hood here.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what happened. Yeah. He's like, I don't know why the alarm was going off when you guys are obviously in here with lawful intent. That's even, yeah. So.
Well, at least they showed up.
Yeah, in this case, they showed up, but maybe...
So I think it's a case of check your local police station and see what their policy is. So this is not going to be a nationwide or even province-wide policy. You're going to have to go to your detachment and say, what do you do when the alarm goes off?
Yep. So, and actually, that's the advice we get in a future email.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so, cool.
Yeah. Who wants the next one? I think it's you, Matthew.
All right. From Curtis. He says, hey, just found your show again since you left CRR. I'm a 17-year-old reservist with the SALH in Medicine Hat.
Thank you for your service.
Absolutely. I've been really into guns since I was about 8, and I grew up in a house with them as kind of an unseen presence until I was about 12 or 13. I shoot quite often with my dad and unit friends and try to keep as up to date as possible in firearms news and politics in general. Having just listened to last week's episode where you were talking to the RCMP officer, you shared some listener questions to him, and I thought I might add some thoughts and opinions. Brace yourself. It's a long one and kind of ranty, too. Oh, and before anyone jumps out to the conclusion that I'm just some kid with nothing rolling around upstairs, at least hear me out. You might be happy to hear that my generation is not entirely screwed. Just mostly. I can't help but notice how backwards our system is. I keep seeing all these ads on TV about how Canadians are great people and what it means to be Canadian. All this feel-good stuff that, while nice, we stand up for each other and won't be pushed around. More often than not, I find myself shaking my head at this because it simply isn't true. We have inadvertently created a society where it is legally dangerous and not to mention frowned upon to come to people's aid when they are being attacked, to call someone out for committing a crime or to protect yourself, those around you, and what is rightfully yours, and thereby extension of oneself. Notice how contradictory the government is by implying that people are innately evil as justification for controlling firearms and other inanimate objects, while on the other hand relying on people's sense of fair play and morality to want to be held accountable for their crime. You mentioned that it is often unadvisable to confront a shoplifter. Wouldn't turning a blind eye or merely informing the manager not simply be letting them get away with it? Sure, you could tell someone, but that doesn't make it unhappen or guarantee that their apprehension, or it doesn't guarantee their apprehension, does it? If someone breaks into your house at night, does it not make sense to stop and ask if they are armed before arming yourself? Of course not. If they even bother to reply yes before presenting, it's too late. I'm not saying shoot them on sight without just cause, but why bet your life or the lives of your loved ones on the obvious criminal's intention? To charge someone with pointing a firearm. Seriously? What a bag of crap. That's just another made-up charge they put in the book so that they could slap more on people who have actually done something wrong, like armed robbery. You should not have to barricade yourself in your room because someone refuses to cooperate when you try and detain them until the people who are supposed to be serving and protecting you arrive. You should never have to be a victim because you were denied the tools to help yourself or others. A young lady should never have to feel scared walking down a street alone at night, and not even East Hastings in Vancouver. As a Canadian, they and everyone else have the right to come and go as they please within Canada, provided that in doing so, they are not committing a crime, and the right to personal safety. That being said, if anything or anyone were to get in the way of those rights, would it not be illegal? I personally don't care if the person robbing or assaulting me had a poor upbringing or a bad addiction. That is a them problem, and the safety is mine. If I were to feel threatened, would it not be my right to neutralize a threat, first by peaceful means, then, if necessary, more persuasive? Maybe not everyone speaks your language, or maybe your physique is not convincing, but one language everyone has come to know is gun. Another is sudden blindness and pain from pepper spray or God forbid, the dreaded Taser C2. I don't think you could make a more backward system than the one that values the lives and rights of obvious criminals more than those of the law-abiding public. Don't even get me started on intent. As far as I'm concerned, that's just a question of whose BS smells better. Do I carry a knife for self-defense? Not officially, but if I feel the need to use it for self-defense, darn right I will. Defense of property? Has the world forgotten about our rights against unlawful search and seizure? I'm pretty sure it doesn't state that it only protects against police abuse, so it should essentially cover it. I've heard they're trying to bring back the death penalty, and now how about we try something new called Castle Doctrine? Who knows, it might save some money and innocent lives. Well, if you don't hate me now and actually made it all the way through without begging for death, thanks for reading and keep up the good work. I love my country and most of the people in it, just not the direction that it's going. Compromise is simply the admission of defeat. And that comes to us from Curtis. So, yes, that was a long email, but he makes some good points. I like the one where it's unadvisable to confront a shoplifter. I've always thought that that is the advice that you have to give, and that's the advice that the police give. Don't get involved, but I've always been of the belief that society should be policing itself. If you see somebody doing something wrong, you are part of society, and if that person is doing something against society, he's doing something against you. Whether they're stealing your stuff or somebody else's, like your neighbor's stuff or Canadian Tire stuff, they're stealing from society, and it's your business. It's your right as a law-abiding citizen of society to intervene and say, that's not what you're supposed to do. We should be policing ourselves. Why are we relying on somebody else to do our job for us?
I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're paid to do. They're paid to put themselves in harm's way, and they're paid to apprehend and stop people.
But what
and
kind of world...
Let me finish. Yep. The reason why they or society encourages us not to get involved is because every once in a while, somebody gets involved who really shouldn't have, because they don't have any skills and they're not qualified to do so, and they end up causing the problem to become worse. Now there's a victim and a criminal to deal with, as opposed to just a criminal, or there's the person who got involved went too far and then they became a criminal. That's the logic for why people are encouraged not to get involved. Agree with it or not,
I understand that. Yeah, I do. And I do see that.
I don't work on my own car because I'm not a mechanic.
Yeah, I do see that point. At the same time, I see that as the world and society in general going downhill. I see people becoming less interested, less involved in their society, less involved in their community. And by extension, that allows criminals and people, ne'er-do-wells, to go out and do things without fear of being caught, because they know that the general populace will just let them go because it's not their job to stop them. And I understand. I think that in this world of litigation and lawsuits that we have, our past generations have sort of thrust upon us, and there's nothing we can really do about it now. It's the status quo. It's the norm. We probably won't be able to change it back to the way it should be, in my opinion, which is everybody looks out for everybody, not everybody looks out for themselves.
I agree.
That's my rant for tonight. Curtis, you make a lot of good points. I agree with a lot of what you say. You are definitely not one of the youths that I have issues with.
The Utes. You'll never be in front of a judge and be referred to as one of the two Utes.
The Utes.
Yeah, outstanding. Incredibly well written for a 17-year-old, and we need more 17-year-olds of that generation to be thinkers and analytical like he is.
Yep, absolutely. Very good. Thank you, Curtis.
Awesome. Who's up? Is it me again? Yeah, Matthew, you, and then me. All right. This one comes to us from John McGregor. John McGregor from the Gunfighter cast.
No, actually, I think there's one before that.
Yeah, there's one from Manny. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll take Manny then. Or Owen, are you up?
Yeah, I'm supposed to.
Okay, go ahead, Owen. Then I'll take McGregor.
Manny says,
"Hello, Jim McGregor," because I knew that would be me in the rotation, but I didn't let you have your turn in the rotation.
That's right. Hey, I'm used to this.
It's all good. Carry on.
Hello, gentlemen. Got a couple questions that I would love your opinion on. I'm considering buying my first AR-15. Not too sure where to start. I would love to build one for my first one, but I think I am going to make a mess of it. I have asked around, but everyone tells me just to buy what they have, or they don't have one. I will most likely be using it in 3-gun in the future. I want something I am happy with, obviously, but that doesn't break the bank. Also possibly considering 300 blackout. Not sure if that is a good idea or not, but I think the 5.56 is too ordinary, so I'm looking into different caliber options. And lastly, I want a 22 conversion kit. What's a good option, and how do those things work? What do they come with? Appreciating any insight you may be able to give. Manny from Winterpeg.
Let me jump in firstly with, because I'm the rimfire expert here, self-appointed, as it were, if you will. But if you are going to go with any caliber other than 5.56 or /223, you will not be able to use a 22 conversion kit in the rifle. The way the 22 conversion kit works is it simply converts the chamber into a 22 long rifle chamber, and then it uses the existing rifling in the barrel, because 5.56 is 22 caliber. So that's how that works. So if you do go with 300 blackout, you're not going to be able to use a 22 conversion kit. Just bear that in mind. That being said, though, if you do want to go 300 blackout or another caliber that's not so ordinary, Trevor might chime in here too and also suggest maybe the 7.62x39. It's a great caliber, very plentiful, inexpensive, and you don't see a lot of AR shooting them. So that might be something if you don't want to go with the ordinary 5.56. As for building one, I'll let Trevor jump in here because he's a bit more versed in that than I am.
What was the question?
Should he build one or buy one?
And he's not sure where to start if he is going to build one.
Build one, or is it his first one?
Yes.
Do you listen when other people read emails? I'm just curious.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
Maybe it's he listened when you were reading, so it must just be me.
He doesn't like you.
Yeah.
No, I'm having that for
a long time.
I'm having a debate with John Evers on Facebook.
So I'll answer for Trevor since he's busy at the moment.
No, I'll do it.
I'm going to give my opinion anyway.
Yeah, go for it.
I think your first AR, you should buy one.
I think your first AR, if you're mechanically inclined, you should build, because you'll learn a lot more about the platform by building your own than you will by just simply buying one. But that depends on if you're a tinker,
you can buy one and then you can take it all apart and figure out how it all works.
Yeah.
If you
and
do,
and then when you go, you know, then you build your next one because you can't just have one.
There's
I still just have one.
What the,
I'm just saying.
You're weird.
Yeah. I am weird. Yeah. Yes, I am. Here's the thing. If you have one
that was given to you.
I really do. But it was given to me in parts, and so I did assemble that.
That's true.
And that was my first AR. And so that is advice that I would not necessarily give to the next person. Your very first gun, if you're mechanically inclined, go ahead and buy it in parts, put it together yourself. It's not that hard, honestly. If I can do it, just about anybody can.
Absolutely.
But that being said, if you're not terribly confident in your own building skills, or if you just want something that you can buy and shoot it right out of the box, buy one. And then at least you know you have a rifle that's been put together properly. Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. When you go to build one, you can say, I'm not really sure how these.
And you can refer
together.
To your first one.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's both sides of the coin there. If you're mechanically inclined, go ahead and build one. Price wise, there's not much difference right now. Whether you buy one assembled or buy it in parts, you're probably going to pay close to the same price.
That's the thing. You can go buy a Norinco, one of the Norinco ARs for $700 brand new and for a little less.
No, not $700. You can get one at Marstar right now, and I almost did, instead of buying two more handguns. You can get a Norc at Marstar for $530. It comes with Ambi Safety and Ambi Mag Release.
Well, that's that deal or something they have with a bunch of ammo and stuff too, isn't it?
No. There's that deal too, Owen. You're right.
Yeah.
But this is just straight up M4 clone, $529.
And don't be scared off by the Norinco name with your ARs. The Norinco ARs are actually very good rifles. That might not be a good start for you, Manny, because it is inexpensive right now. It is a Norinco. It does have ambidextrous everything, which is really nice. So, I mean,
and a chrome line barrel.
And a chrome line barrel. I mean, whatever you want, really.
There's pros and cons, Manny, to building or buying. If you're in a hurry, buy. You're going to pay more probably if you build, unless you're willing to take your time and only buy things when you find them on sale, and you have to spend a lot of time online finding looking at different online retailers that have the components you need on sale. If you buy everything on sale, you might come out ahead, but you're not going to certainly come out for $530. If you just want one, you can grab that one. NEAs are inexpensive. I mean, there's a couple of under $1,000 options out there, at least three that I can think of, maybe even four. So
Shop around. I mean, first of all, decide. Do you want to build or do you want to buy? And we really can't give you advice on that because we don't know if you're a tinkerer or mechanically inclined. You make that decision, and then once you've made that decision, if you want to build, get back to us, and maybe we can point in the right direction for some parts. And if you just want to buy it, Trevor's given you the perfect advice you need right there just now.
And the thing to remember is you are going to get more than one. So if you buy your first one, build your second one. If you build your first one, buy your second one. I built more than I bought, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
cool.
But,
all
right. Yeah.
And I haven't saved money in doing so. I just like building them.
Well, so, they are fun to build.
They're.
Well, and especially, I mean, he said, you know, if you're asking around, he asks around, and everyone tells him to buy it, or they don't have one. So he's obviously not in a gun community there where, you know, a lot of local people would be able to, you know, help him out if there was something, you know, as far as building. There's not, you know, so then you're even limited. You know, you don't have a buddy that can come over and say, oh, it's easy, I've done it four times.
Yeah,
I'll come
over. You don't have Owen, Trevor, and Matthew living next door to you.
Exactly. So.
This next one comes to us from John McGregor. John McGregor from the Gunfighter cast. Welcome, John. John says, that was awful. But
because he has a Scottish name, so therefore you think he has to have a Scottish accent.
That's because I'm just copying the gun dudes like we've been doing for years.
that's what we're known for, really. We're the copycats. The Canadian copycats.
We're the Norinco gun dudes.
Right. Gun dudes of the North.
Gun dudes clone, yeah. Gun dudes of the North. So they call him John McGregor, so I've got to call him John McGregor.
Absolutely.
So Mr. McGregor says, oh, and by the way, Mr. McGregor is the, he's kind of a big deal, if you don't know. Like the fact that, A, he listens, wow, B, he wrote us.
Double
I'm
wow.
Never washing my eyes after reading this.
Never, well, except with bleach.
He is the co-host of Gunfighter Cast with Mr. Shaw. So, awesome. So it started off, I got a Facebook message from him, and we had a wonderful conversation, and now he took trouble to write into the show. So he says, hi, guys. I enjoyed your last episode. Trevor taught me some things that I hadn't been told about the SIG P320 line. And that's all I have to say. We're just going to stop there. I taught John McGregor some stuff. Let's just wrap up the show.
And thanks for listening. Bow, yeah. Bow, 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 bow. Oh, wait, that's the other song.
He carries on. He says, I wanted to comment about one of the emails you read, the one about burglar alarms.
Oh, here we go again.
I would suggest that you talk to an officer in your jurisdiction directly.
Wait, wasn't that my advice? So now you may have taught him something, but now he has now backed me up. So that's two of us now that are like John McGregor worthy. I'm just saying.
Get off my bandwagon. What are you doing?
Look, basically I'm pushing you off and grabbing the reins.
See
is what
that.
I'm doing. Yeah.
He says, in the U.S., ordinances about false alarms vary from town to town. Generally, you get a couple of free passes before you start getting charged for false alarms. It sounded like the email was suggesting that the police want you to search your house before the police get there. Again, check with one of your local officers. Speaking as a police officer, it is true that we want a homeowner or emergency contact on scene. If we find someone at the residence, we may need confirmation that they are who they claim to be. We may have questions about vehicles parked in the driveway or vicinity, damage to the residence that may or may not be old, and other questions that would help determine how likely it is that an actual break-in has occurred and how likely it is that the suspects are still inside the residence. Building searches are dangerous things, and I can't imagine that the police want you to try and do them by yourself. If I had the option to do a building search alone or wait for a second officer to respond, I'll wait every time, if he has the option. There is nothing in your house worth anyone getting shot over. Thank you, John. I agree wholeheartedly. I wouldn't worry too much about if the officer is going to be angry with you for a false alarm. You may want to get an officer. You may get an officer who is an a-hole. But
yeah, you may not want to get an officer who's an a-hole, but you might get one, yeah.
Yeah. But at least you didn't get killed because you didn't want to pay for an alarm fine. In my experience, no one is going to be angry with you. When people would apologize about their alarms going off, I would remind them that it is what they pay taxes for. Now, if this is the third time in 2 hours that your alarm has gone off, you may be met with some frustration by the responding officers, but I would assure you that I would assume you would be frustrated too if your house was broken into while police in your area were repeatedly responding to someone else's broken alarm. Keep up the good work, John McGregor from the Gunfighter Cast.
Very
I never
cool.
tried so hard to read an email decently before.
John, could you write in more often, please?
Only if he wants to pay for my Hooked on Phonics.
Right. Ah, you did fine.
All right, who's got Jeff's?
You're the boss. You tell us.
Well, I don't know. I'm emailing. It. I'm Facebooking people. Now
I'll
I'm talking
it.
To Robert Bracken.
I'll take
Thank
it.
You. Thank
Can
you.
I have
Owen.
It?
Yeah,
yes.
go on.
Owen, will you take this one?
This is from Jeff. Gentlemen, situation awareness, like what I use while looking at the Slamfire Radio page at work.
You got to keep your head in a swivel so that boss doesn't sneak up on you.
That's right. We need to put a boss button on there.
Ooh, that's a great idea. You yes. click it, and all of a sudden it goes to like a database of some
yeah,
sort.
Yeah, exactly. Stats yeah. on, you know, bird watching in Toronto or something.
Right, yeah. Well, he's in Alberta or somewhere like
Calgary.
Calgary. I don't know.
I know it's been discussed at various points. Perhaps you could point me to the relevant podcast if it was covered in depth. Thanks. Mr. Ayub discusses Lieutenant Colonel Cooper's color conditions. I like me a good alliteration.
I love it. Me too, Jeff. I love alliteration.
And says that we should practice being in a relatively consistent condition yellow. What I'm looking for are recommendations for a couple good books that cover the topic as it relates to civilian daily lives. Keep up the great work at the show, guys. That's from Jeff.
Well, Jeff, I went ahead, read your mind, and posted a very good article on the Slamfire Facebook page, which you've already commented on and said, go ahead and disregard my email because this is exactly what I was looking for. But we have gone ahead and read your email anyway because we like hearing from you, first of all, and secondly, we want other people to realize that there's a good place to go check that article out as well. So head over to the Facebook page, and it's probably three or four links down now at this point, but there's a good one. It's an interesting read. It's something titled along the lines of, you know, do you want to be able to be as good as Jason Bourne or something like that? You never will be. Jason Bourne's the best, but whatever.
You know, it was funny that you posted that, and I read that article like that morning.
Oh, really? You read
yeah,
it?
I
and
had
then...
read it, and I was like, oh, that's a cool article. Talking about what we were talking about the other day. Oh, that's neat. Yeah. And then you posted on the Facebook page. I was like, oh.
Great minds think alike.
Nice.
Yep. Thanks, Jeff. And situational awareness is definitely something that we all need to have the forefront of our minds.
Indeed. I was just in condition white because I was talking to John Evers again about how beautiful he is.
Well, do you want to keep talking to him and I'll read this and you can just read the last paragraph?
Sure.
All right. This is from, this is De Sylvain. De
Sylvain.
De Sylvain. From Sylvain, basically.
Couturier vient de Sylvain.
All right. So he says, hello, everyone and the other. I'll let you determine who is the other.
I think it's me.
it's Owen. Definitely Owen. I've been listening since your beginnings in CRR. Okay, maybe around episode 40. In fact, my knowledge of the gun culture grew almost with you. It was at the time that I received my restricted PAL and was looking for more info on guns. Now, when I walk at job... Now whenever I'm walking at work, I'm constantly singing, when the talking is over, it's time to get a gun. Nice. Working in the bank sector, I try to keep my voice low, as it could bring me some security problems. I like it. I grew up in a small village, and I often went with my father to the river across the fields, hunting groundhogs and shooting targets with his Cooey 22 long rifle. It sounds like your father and I would get along great, Sylvain. I love Cooey 22s. That's all from my experience until I turned 30, and my wife told me one night, we should sign up at a shooting range to shoot some pistols. I said, okay. So we passed our courses, and a couple of months later, I am the happy owner of a Beretta Neos in 22 long rifle for 3 years, and I'm still amazed at the quality and configuration and the comfortability of the grip on it. Look,
is that really spacey-looking one?
It is. They are very comfortable. I've shot one before, and I wanted to get one because you can get a carbine conversion kit for it. The grip switches out, so you get a shoulder stock, and then you install a longer barrel on it. But the problem is the frame doesn't change. And as you know, in Canada, once a pistol, always a pistol. So it was still restricted, even though it met the requirements of a non-restricted firearm. So that's why I didn't go ahead and get that one. So anyway, those are very cool little guns, for sure. Then I said, I got the right to own guns. Why don't I go hunting? My wife is still waiting for something to eat from my harvesting, but I haven't given up. One day I will...
Yeah,
no. Shh. shh, quiet. One day, I will honor my ancestors who hunted for a living in the 1700s. My first rifle was a Russian SKS with 1,000 rounds of ammo. After two deer hunts, still nothing. Well, here's the thing. You don't shoot all 1,000 rounds before you go up in the deer stand. You wait for the deer to get there. Not that you should take any hunting advice from me. Listening to you talk about the gun laws, it reminded me that we need to do something good in our silly province that you find desirable. I don't think we find anything about your province desirable, Sylvain. Before being allowed to shoot restricted firearms, we have to pass a practical test and succeed in shooting a paper target without breaking any security rules. The one once of common sense in a ton... Oh, sorry, here we go. My bad. The one common sense rule in a ton of chicken with running around with chicken with your head cut off. The translation to English to French here is, that's my bad, Sylvain, not you. You're doing great. Anyway, yeah, I understand what you're trying to say there. And then Trevor's going to finish us off here with...
Ça fait longtemps que je n'ai pas entendu Trevor parler en français. Alors, s'il est là cette semaine, vous pouvez lui faire lire mon message. Je vous remercie pour ce que vous faites et je vous encourage à continuer votre travail pour faire connaître les armes à feu au plus de gens possible. Au revoir, Sylvain de Québec. The last part was, if I'm there, make him embarrass himself by reading in French. And he thanks us for what we do and promoting firearms to people.
Oh, see, I get that he was asking you for a massage, and the possibilities could be endless. But I'm not sure.
That's what I'm. Yeah, that's what I kind of see there too. Message, massage. Yeah, looks the same to me. Possibilities are endless. Yeah, yeah.
Vous pouvez lui faire lire mon
message. No, you don't need to read it again. No, you don't need to read
it
again.
You can have him read my message.
It's too late. Yeah.
So, the thing, I don't want it anyway.
What?
Oh, it's just the inconsistencies in how the same Federal Firearms Act is implemented from province to province. They've got loi 9, loi 20. You've got Kyle Marconi doesn't have his ATT yet. You know why? Because he had to take a club-level ATT class so his club could sponsor him for a piece of paper that the government has said they have to issue to him. If the government has to give you your ATT, what freaking business is it of the club to make him take an ATT class?
That's the biggest
load of crap I've ever seen.
I suppose it would anger him greatly to find out that I emailed just my PIL number with a request saying, "Hey, could I get my ATT for this year?" And to the CFO's office with a photograph of my range card. And I did that on Monday, and on Thursday I had my ATT in the mail.
Oh yeah, and how about this, Matthew? How about the people at the club level? Didn't do it. They didn't send in his paperwork.
Right.
So there's another month that he could be out shooting, wasted, because somebody at the club who dropped the ball.
Which they shouldn't have had the ball in the first place. The ATT is between the license holder and the CFO. That's it. Your club does not need to be involved.
I don't know why people in Ontario are putting up with this. You guys should be telling club executives, you either get rid of this or we're all going to quit and start our own club somewhere else or something.
Well,
if the rest of us don't have to do it, why do you?
I think that's a CFO requirement, though, to open a club in Ontario. I think they forced it on them, which is wrong because that's above and beyond their mandate. They should not be doing that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ontario listeners. With my understanding, this was a club thing that was proposed to the CFOs. It wasn't even the CFO's idea. But if it is, it makes sense what you're saying, Matthew, that it would be the CFO that enforced it on them. Then okay.
But I might be wrong. I'd like to hear somebody from Ontario tell me which way it is.
Yeah. One final little rant about inconsistencies. In New Brunswick, we don't shroud steel for anything. Get this. In Ontario, IPSC, they have to shroud steel. Cowboy Action, they don't have to shroud steel.
Oh, that makes sense, because the steel in Cowboy Action is softer and bullets won't ricochet off it.
Yeah, and it's at 10 meters. Wait a second.
It's the same thing. Oh, that drives me nuts. I'm glad I don't live in Ontario anymore.
Steel is steel and bullets are bullets. Now, I don't care if you're shooting at them with a lead projectile or a jacketed projectile. It doesn't matter. It's going to be splash.
As long as that steel isn't cratered, it's going 90 degrees. It's not coming back at you.
So why is it it's safe to shoot steel here without shrouding, but when you cross over the magical line into the province of Nova Scotia or into the province of Ontario...
You nailed it. It's the magical line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guys of public safety or something. I don't know. In Quebec, no steel at all. So...
Yeah. It's frustrating. It's Very frustrating.
Tired of it.
Yeah.
Well, how come one province gets to do something and another province doesn't? It's all the same Firearms Act. Anyway, all right. That's our last email, and we would like to encourage. We had a lot this week. We apologize; the show went really long, guys, but we had a lot of stuff to cover this week. We want to see more emails next week, and you can send them to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to check us out on iTunes. If you leave us a rating and a 5-star review, that'll help get the show noticed, help us get new listeners, make it funny, pick on me, whatever, and then we'll make sure we read it on the show. I've got one shout out, to Byron, and that was for pointing out my, NEA problem, and to Filthy for also pointing out the NEA problem, and for all the people who made fun of me on Facebook, and to John.
That's who I want to shout out. I want to shout out everybody who made fun of Trevor.
Yeah.
Good job, guys.
Thanks for that. Yeah. And, Byron, thanks for showing me a helicopter engine that I thought came out of an RX-7. That wasn't embarrassing either. I really shouldn't. I just shouldn't touch tools. And to John Evers, thanks for talking to me throughout the entire show on Facebook.
And to John Evers, would you quit talking to Trevor throughout the entire show on Facebook?
It's important stuff.
It could wait.
And he's a busy guy. So.
All right. Let's wrap this up. My battery's dying.
Okay. So check us out on the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcast.com. Make sure to join both of the National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA. It's been a lot of drama over the last few days about he said, she said stuff at the Toronto Sportsman Show. And you know what? If the NFA petition gets you, if it goes through, everyone in Canada who's a firearms owner who has those products is going to benefit, whether they're a member of either group or neither group. So my point is, I've said it before, I'll say it again, both want to get you more rights, privileges, and freedoms. So just join them both and stop worrying about what the other guy's doing. Just the antis are united. We need to be united. And that's really all I have to say about that. Like us or check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. We've got our own little forum on there. We're only Chris Anderson posts, and we appreciate it.
That's not true. We actually have had some
Funnier My Way, and okay. like us on Facebook. We're up to 1,150, which is way more than the Polite Society podcast.
So
thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll see you next week.
Hug Ron Burgundy.
Hug Ron Burgundy. There you go. And Owen, what's Owen going to say this week? Everybody hold your breath. Here it comes. Something profound. Owen, wake up. It's your turn.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over,
it's time to get a gun. Weird because it's not Thursday night. I don't know if I can podcast not on a Thursday night.
It's not Thursday, so I don't know how to turn this on. It's crazy.
I'm serious. It's just like it's just really messing with my head. I'm like, I don't even know what to do. What do I do? Okay.
Should I just leave it off? Should I just do that?
Tom leaves it off. And joining us now is myself, really, basically. Here we are on there. Yeah.
That's what I should do. I should just start it off just like, let me see, 3, 2. And here I am joining Slamfire Radio tonight on a Tuesday because no one else can do an intro.